say to turn on your radio.
Something fresh and exciting. Somebody with a sock personality that'll sweep people right off their feet.
Where is he? What is he up to? What other terrors can he unleash at will?
Starring your genial host, renowned writer, art collector, and teller of strange tales.
What fiendish power did he possess? Where did he come from? Who is this man?
Believe me.
It's the mostly peaceful Shannon Burke Show on the Florida Man Radio Network for a Wednesday. Talk radio the way our founders intended. America, where, according to protesters in New York City, fat liberation and Palestinian liberation apparently go hand in hand. Day 1195. Hey, for the Eric in America, say hello to EZ.
What's up?
Good afternoon. Putting the heat in, Heather.
Hey, guys.
Double H is here. We'll hear from her in the next hour. Heather has answers. Dark history at the top of the third hour. Our buddy John Jensen, the voice of reason, top of the final hour. And your remarks in between for the Florida Man Radio app. Well, this is pretty much a done deal if you ask me. I think this is the fourth time I have heard in the last year FBI Director Christopher Wray issuing yet another warning about a possible terror attack on U.S. soil, right? Twice I've heard him do it in front of Congress.
It's almost like a guy's asking for a terrorist attack.
Or,
you know, the people that are like, oh, I mean, I'm walking here with no gun and a wallet full of $1,000 worth of cash.
It happens a lot. And I think, you know, in the way the back of my mind, there's an October surprise, or maybe before that, but meant to be about the same. Because this time, this warning came along with a rather convenient prediction. He practically tells us what it's going to be. On NBC, he said, I'm increasingly concerned about the potential of some kind of coordinated attack here in the homeland. An event that, quote, may not be that different from what you saw against the concert hall in Russia a few weeks ago from ISIS-K, which killed 144 people. He told the House of Representatives earlier this month that current terror threat is the highest that he can remember in his career. Now on NBC, he gets a little more detailed about it. He says, as I look back over my career in law enforcement, I'd be hard pressed to think of a time where so many threats to our public safety and national security were so elevated at one time. He claimed that the FBI has had 4,000 international terrorism investigations open at the end of 2023. And he said the threat has increased quite a bit since the October 7th attacks. He said, you know, whether it's a threat from China, Russia, or Iran, there are terrorism threats, both foreign terrorism threats and domestic terrorist threats. And so you think that at this point, you'd have to say that it's inevitable. And maybe all of the warnings show that, oh, Christopher Wray was right. But also, all of the warnings, and if there is a successful terror attack, then he was right about predicting it, or they did a poor job of defending against it or stopping it, or they're planning the whole thing, execute themselves, or with some type of patsy. You know what I mean? They say we have a substantial jump in threats towards FBI personnel and facilities. Well, that's not good. We created a dedicated unit to deal with those issues. It's just too much warning, and then on top of it, you say, oh, I think it might be something similar to what we saw. And I mean, how do you know that much detail?
I'm sure they have a bunch of leads that they're following. But, I mean, there's only so many times you can get on TV and be like, okay, guys, there's a good chance there'll be a terror attack. And then everybody goes, no, everyone, there's a good chance there's going to be a terror attack.
Right. I've never been this worried about a terror attack. No. We never got any, prior to 9/11, none of us really worried about a terror attack on our soil ever.
No, we were invincible.
And there was allegedly chatter in the system about using airplanes as weapons, as missiles, and hijacking planes, chatter in the system. Allegedly. But now it's like it's going to happen. I don't know. Just too many warnings for me. I'll tell you what else I'm worried about is this. It's quietly sneaking up on us. President Biden is facing mounting pressure to act on climate change with little hope of pressing major legislation. There is a fear, and it's on the table for sure, that he would declare a national climate emergency. That would be an absolute nightmare. He would have not just COVID-like powers or 9/11 powers. He would have over 130 separate wartime-like powers tapping the National Emergency Act. Now, rumors are of him halting. Here's the thing I don't understand. There are rumors he'll halt billions, hundreds of billions of dollars in fossil fuel investment, use the Defense Production Act to force some manufacturers to make windmills and solar panels and batteries and blah, blah, blah. But my belief is this wouldn't be about climate at all. You call it a national climate emergency. Isn't the climate emergency a global climate emergency? And how can you declare a climate emergency in the United States of America that's brought down all of its CO2 steadily, its emissions, while China is doubling down and India is doubling down? It wouldn't make much sense to do it. And also, the actions of the Biden administration show that he's really not about climate. You know, it's really more talk. I mean, he is. In the past year, he approved more drilling in Alaska. He supported a liquefied natural gas export along the Gulf Coast. And he fast-tracked a pipeline known as the Mountain Valley Methane Pipeline. So if he's doing all that now, which is expanding.
Yeah, that's not doing anything for the environment.
Right. And so how would he yield his emergency powers, war-like and COVID-like, pandemic-like emergency powers he's going to stop all the things that he just approved in the last year?
No, my understanding with those powers, it's to the point where he could tell people that they can't drive on the weekends. He could shut down travel in certain areas. He could, the powers are like way overreaching powers that no president has ever had before.
It wouldn't be about climate at all. And of course, it would be challenged. We have a Supreme Court at this point that I think would overturn it, overrule it. But you have to look at the history. The Supreme Court has never overturned a presidential emergency declaration.
Yeah, but these are the type of things that the powers that he would have are the type of things that create civil wars. And the fact that states would just refuse to enforce them. They would refuse it. I mean, it would be a slippage of, they would just try to withhold all the federal funding. But states like Florida would not allow certain things to happen. Certain other states would just refuse the national, those type of things.
The Emergency Powers Act is kind of, it just unlocks the door to other unbelievable powers. Here's another thing. We're 6 months out from a presidential election. Does it outweigh a political risk? I mean, if we're coming up on a general election and 6 months out, the sitting president running for re-election declares a national climate emergency And somehow, I mean, I'm looking at ways that the national climate emergency would affect an election.
I mean,
we can't drive to the thing. You can't drive to the poll. So we got to do all mail in.
Theoretically, with those type of powers, since they are a wartime mess, he could theoretically cancel an election. Now, would he? I mean, that's the end of, you want to talk about end of our democracy?
Oh,
that's
yeah.
End of our democracy.
Right.
But theoretically, by those powers, he could say, because he's saying for the good of the American people, he needs to stay in power until this climate crisis is over.
Will he hold off doing it? A major climate speech he's scheduled for today in Massachusetts. I mean, I know he's not going to declare it today. Maybe he mentions it today. Paul Bledsoe, one time a climate advisor for Clinton, is pretty skeptical about it. He didn't believe it'll stand up to court scrutiny. Last month, conservatives on the Supreme Court curtailed the federal government's ability to regulate carbon dioxide from power plants. He said the only sure way to meet ambitious U.S. climate goals is to unleash tens of billions of dollars in private sector investment, which is precisely what pending clean energy tax incentives would do. And to declare a climate emergency now, when quite literally the national emergency we have is at our southern border. I think everyone would agree is at our southern border. Jeff Stein, let's see, from the Post, Senator Tommy reports that Thomas Carper, a Democrat out of Delaware, said, quote, right now you've got Europe on fire. Was Europe on fire? Is it on fire?
No.
Put the news on. Record temperatures in Great Britain. They're trying to have Tour de France, and they're having problems keeping enough water to keep people go. They have to cancel the Tour de France because they don't have enough water for the cyclists to drink. That's literally what he said.
All right. But the Olympics are also going on here soon, and they seem to be just fine. They're not canceling that.
Buttigieg said he defends Biden's goal of 50% electric vehicles on the market by 2030. That's impossible.
Yeah, it's impossible.
Completely and utterly impossible. The House Committee on Transportation had a hearing focused on infrastructure investments and job creation, responding to doubt from the GOP. Buttigieg touted the goal for its potential to bring cost-saving technology to vulnerable communities and help combat climate change. We talk it's all of these, you know, these generalities and platitudes, believe it or not, a moral obligation to continue to use fossil fuels. I mean, for humanity's sake. But we just want to say, oh, well, if vulnerable communities, cost-saving technology and, you know. You wait for it. They're weighing it right now. I mean, it could be someone. I listened to one cat. Let me get this audio. He said he's afraid he could do it in the coming weeks. You think he would do that in the coming weeks?
I think they're definitely weighing it. But again, I just don't know how they're going to justify it.
Right. There has to be something. At least with the pandemic, there was a thing. We couldn't really see the thing, but we were aware of its that it was around. You know, people getting sick, hospital numbers reported,
I mean, they could at least wait, I don't know, another month, and then they could get a hot day. And then, look, guys, it was 95 degrees there. You got to.
That's another thing. It's been, especially, I know, not knock on wood, because that's about to end. It's been especially mild here. You know, it's been actually kind of nice. Oh, here's this. This is. I forget this cat's name.
Really made such an impression, which was now a decade ago, which is sort of amazing. And yeah. It's been so long, the moral case for fossil fuels. And, you know, your
Scott
premise is sort of obvious, but and it's amazing it has to even be said. But basically, using fossil fuels is a moral issue. For our viewers, why don't you explain that thesis?
When we're looking at fossil fuels, we're failing to consider the enormous benefits. And the parallel I noticed to COVID is when you fail to consider the enormous benefits of something, you are failing to consider the costs of restricting. And what I saw with COVID was everyone was only talking about the benefits of restricting human activity in the name of this one virus. We'll get back to the obsession with one virus, but they weren't talking about the costs.
You know, just like practically anything else that this administration has jumped into, they're just merely jumping into it. Well, oh yeah, climate. We gotta just stop driving. It's an emergency. You cannot drive. Or maybe it means that every car built before the year 1990 needs to be turned in. Remember that used car buyback thing at Biden's? Yeah. I mean, Obama's.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if we get almost like a, you know, fuel crisis era run where, hey, if your license plate ends with an odd number, you can only drive Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. If it's an even number, you can do Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, or whatever.
Right. Yeah, I'm afraid of that.
The White House telling Fox Business it's now considering declaring a national climate emergency. But that's a climate crisis to you, Mark. The AP, which sets the standards for newsrooms across the country, they're urging Americans to use the term climate crisis to address the current situation. This is all troubling, but if the president declares a climate emergency, what impact does that have?
Well, I mean, this is the serious story of the today. NBC News has reported that if Joe Biden declares a national climate emergency, he would have COVID-like powers under that emergency, and they also compared the emergency powers to the 9/11 emergency powers. The Center for Biological Diversity has estimated Joe Biden would get about 130 wartime-like powers by which to bypass democracy and impose the Green New Deal on America without a single vote of Congress.
Impose the Green New Deal. I don't know about that. I mean, I remember the parts of the Green New Deal where it was ridiculous. It was a joke. It was like ending all air travel by a certain day. I mean, no more transatlantic. I mean, it was just bizarre.
Yeah, it was impossible.
We're going to build a bridge to Europe or some nonsense. I mean,
bullet trains everywhere.
Biden has also freed five crack dealers using his clemency powers this morning. He released five people imprisoned for dealing crack cocaine, which is so, I mean, he's the reason people were in prison for crack cocaine for so long. I mean, the 94 crime bill?
Yeah.
That made powder cocaine a joke? You know, you could have that, a sugar dish, a bowl full of it. But if you had a tiny rock of crack, gone. Yeah, that's bad. Saying, as he did in America's a Nation founded on the promise of second chances, during the Second Chance Month, we affirm our commitment to rehabilitation and reentry for people returning to their communities post-incarceration. No mention of the 2,700 federal marijuana dealing inmates currently in jail that he promised to give clemency to during the Democratic primaries in 2019. Doesn't it seem, anywhere around Biden, you don't want the word crack appearing in any headline. I mean, the first thing you thought, the first thing thought, the first thing, anyway, when you read the headline, Biden frees five crack dealers, makes no progress to on vow to reduce pot inmates, you think, all right, Hunter, let's dad a note. Look, can you get these guys, you know, my buddy's out of jail.
Mm-hmm. Hunter greeted them at the airport with a sign that said, "Welcome home, guys."
I mean, right now, why don't you just wave the wand on all the pot inmates that are in federal custody for dealing weed?
I don't get that one. You know, they keep hinting, they're like, oh, we're going to decriminalize marijuana any day now. We're going to drop it. You guys just wait just one more month and what you... Hold on and be a vote for me next month.
Yeah.
And then we'll get rid of criminalizing marijuana. I mean, again, why you got rid of five crack dealers that you said were nonviolent, but most of the people that are in jail for marijuana are nonviolent offenders. So, I mean, what you keep telling everybody you're also going to let them all out of jail. What's the hold up here?
I mean, that was a promise. I mean, a lot of pot guys have been let out, you know, or had their records expunged or their sentences commuted or whatever, except for the estimated 2,700 that are in federal custody. When we return, some updates from Hamas headquarters in New York City. You'll be surprised to learn that some of the protesters up there, not real sure what they're there for. Hang on. It's the Shannon Berg Show. Well, I don't know why they do this, but they've given the protesters at the encampment some extra time as they continue to negotiate. This is basically negotiating with terrorists, right?
Yeah, and from the stuff that I think I just saw from the president of Colombia, she's going to basically back down completely.
What do you mean? Let them stay?
Let them stay. They have to disassemble some of the tents.
Yeah.
They can only be Colombia students, so anybody right. there that's not a student has to leave.
And they have to follow New York City fire safety yeah. rules. And they have, they're denying anyone to use harassing or discriminatory language.
So, yeah, they're just letting them stay.
These similar encampments are popping up everywhere. University of Michigan has one. MIT has one. Cal State Polytech Humboldt has one. they in New York, they've told them, at Columbia, all the people in the encampment must be enrolled in Columbia. You can't have any outsiders in there. Today in Texas, Rice University in Houston will have a walkout. University of Texas had a walkout. I saw some footage of it earlier. In the Midwest, University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign has a walkout. University of Michigan saw students setting up their encampment there. The rally is scheduled as well. All of this, and I'm not sure all of them are completely certain exactly what they're there protesting. Here's some ladies in New York City.
And what would you say is the main goal with tonight's protest?
I think the goal is just showing our support for Palestine and demanding that NYU stops. I honestly don't know all of what NYU's doing.
Is there something that NYU's doing?
I really don't know. I'm pretty sure they're... Do you know what NYU's doing?
About what?
About Israel. Why are we protesting here?
Palestine will be free!
I wish I was more educated.
I'm not either.
Oh.
I wish I was more educated.
Like, oh my God, I just showed up on this bus and I'm here protesting.
And I heard a great theory about that attitude. Is that it used to be, you know, we were against homophobia, racism, this, that, you know, blah, blah, blah. Now it's all one thingism, that these protests, one woman said, Palestine is every single issue in one issue. She goes on to say, it's reproductive justice, it's social justice, it's climate justice. It's not just one issue. It's all issues in one.
I don't think they understand how a protest works.
I don't either. But I do believe that this lady, by the way, is a singer and songwriter, describes herself as an anti-racist mother and an abolition feminist womanist. Jesus, I don't mean it, lady.
I'm glad she's an anti-racist mother.
Right. Yeah.
I hate hanging out with those racist mothers out there.
I get the attitude. Right, because these are all things that bother your typical person on the left that would protest. They're upset about Roe being overturned. They're upset about, you know, they all want equity and DEI, social justice, the climate, the earth, and this is an opportunity I guess, to collectively wrap all those things together and air your, you know, your grievances in a one size fits all protest. And there's a couple of other, a few hundred masked protesters chanting "Death to America" also had a meaningless slogan that they were raising called, it said, "From Chicago to Palestine." I don't know what that means. There were also a lot of people out there at this protest wearing shirts that read "Fatties for Free Palestine." It included this quote on the shirt: "Palestinian solidarity is not a niche issue. Fat liberation and Palestinian liberation go hand in hand."
I don't know how they connect that. The two Venn diagrams do not match at all.
No, at all.
Those circles are really far apart.
They do say, during the Trans Day of Visibility marches, Palestinian flags were flying above the trans flags at some marches. One sign explained, quote, "Liberations are linked." Liberations are linked. Fat people, fat liberation is linked to Palestinian liberation?
No. They can't even. There's no justification to them either way. I mean, if you want to say that Palestine is under this apartheid and there's it's an open air prison, they can't get out and they're starving in there and they're being just genocided out of the world. There is no fat genocide that's going on right now.
No. No, there's not.
There's no trans genocide.
There's no trans genocides going on right now. It's really narcissistic identity politics on steroids.
Yeah, they take whatever their cause is and they just lump it all together.
It's no longer enough to have solidarity with even the people of Palestinians. You must be them. Are you fat, trans? You're somehow sharing a position with starved, bombed out citizens of Gaza. All one thingism.
So that's why we have a bunch of people that are just protesting to protest. They have no idea why they're out there.
Right.
Maybe they have another cause that they're hoping to maybe slip a sign in there. All of a sudden we're going to see like a dude there is like, "Yeah, I'm all for Palestine being free, but also bald guy rights." Yeah, everybody else is in for that.
There were, here's how they've militarized at Columbia anyway, like organizing, here, I'll let this guy must feel like Abby Hoffman or something here. Hold on.
Because of that, in advance of an imminent sweep, we are entering a period of high alert for the next 3 days. And that is why I urge all of you to talk to your friends as well and let them know that we may need people to turn up quickly, en masse, in front of the encampment to defend the encampment.
This guy must... I guess there's some way they feel they're important. You know, they feel like they're really doing the right thing. No matter if they're not really sure exactly why they're protesting Columbia, the school itself, they know it's got something to do with Palestinians, and that's good with them.
Oh, that dude on the bullhorn there, it just is getting a rush out of this. He thinks he's a revolutionary. Yeah. And he's going to be like, they're just in another, like 20 years from now, kids are going to go to college wearing my face on a shirt just like all those Che Guevara. Like,
I better grow an interesting facial hair. There were up to 1,000 protesters in front of Schumer's house. Chuck Schumer finally getting a taste of his own medicine. Here's the cops out in front.
Pedestrian traffic. If you do not disperse, you will be arrested. You're creating a hazard.
I wonder if Chuck got any sleep last night. 239 arrested in front of his home.
He probably wasn't even there. He headed on down to La Quinta down the street and rented out a suite. Yeah. Why do all the girls sound exactly the same, though? You can play clips from every different part of the country, and they all sound exactly the same. Free, free Palestine.
I'm kind of understanding, because it is difficult to wrap your head around why so many people are so effing passionate about a place so far away they know very, very little about, and whose residents, occupants would probably kill them if they showed up there to help them. That part boggles my mind. But when you take the all thingism, that attitude, they got a lot to protest about.
There's times where I almost think that they're just itching to start a riot again. Like they're wanting some of these cops to maybe roughly arrest somebody too much, where then they want to burn down another Burger King. I think there's times where that's all. They just want to burn something, throw some bricks through some windows.
Just get it out of their system, yeah. All the stuff they're angry about. I want a more piece of this guy. Really, here's one of the professors. He's a Jewish NYU professor, Scott Galloway, and he's talking about what we don't see is the blatant double standard. All of a sudden, you know, these little groups, you know, in this case, Jews, death to the Jews, death to Israel. He explains that if he had put any other person, any other faction of peoples in place of Jews, that it'd be over.
And I do think there is a double standard. I walked by NYU last night. What I saw was peaceful protests. But I can tell you, if I went into the NYU square with a white hood on and said, lynch the blacks or burn the gays, my ID would be shut off by that night. And I would never work in academia again. There would be no need for the words context or nuance. I wouldn't be protected by terms like First Amendment or free speech. I would be out of the world of academia. It seems like we have a double standard when it comes to hate speech, as long as it's against Jews.
And we're not just talking about the exercising of free speech and protest, which we agree people have, and there are spaces on campus for that. It's what they're saying is the harassment of Jewish students. So what is that? Why is there that double standard? Because of course you're right. You don't even have to say it out loud. If these things were being said about black people or gay people or Latinos or Asian or anybody else, forget it. Shut down the school. Everybody's expelled. Why is there still that double standard?
I think it's complicated. I think, one, young people have a healthy gag reflex on what people our age think. And I think that's healthy. Two, I don't think Israel has draped itself in glory over the last 20 or 30 years. They've shifted from being kind of the David to the Goliath. I also think that incorrectly, students on campus conflate the civil rights movement with what is going on in Palestine and have digressed, unfortunately, because of an orthodoxy promoted by me and my colleagues that there are oppressors and oppressed. And the easiest way to identify oppressors is how white and how rich they are, or fairly or unfairly, Israel is seen as ground zero for whiteness and how wealthy they are. And then what might sound paranoid, but doesn't mean I'm wrong. I think we are being manipulated, specifically youth, who their frame for the world is TikTok. And if you look at TikTok, there are 52 videos that are pro-Hamas or pro-Palestinian for every one served on Israel.
There's the bill to ban TikTok is on Biden's desk.
Which I think he'll sign.
Do you?
Yes, I do.
And then what happens? It just goes away from America. I don't think he'll sign it.
I think they have a year to de-invest here in the U.S., so they'd have to sell it off here. It would become an American company here in the U.S. specifically, or then it's banned. But I don't think it's going to happen for them. They're going to just say, we don't care, and leave the U.S.
But Biden's campaigning on there.
Yeah, but when it passes both the House and the Senate, with pretty actually quite ease, then it's tough to be that one that vetoes that.
Well, if you need any more evidence that legacy mainstream media are all one big breathing monster together that hate Donald Trump, it's Politico reported that a group of anti-Trump legal pundits reportedly meet for weekly Zoom calls to discuss the latest on Donald Trump and how they can, ensure his demise. They're scheduled for Fridays. They're hosted by Norman Eisen, a CNN legal analyst and former Obama official. It includes anti-Trump commentators Bill Kristol, George Conway, liberal Harvard Law professor Lawrence Tribe, former Nixon White House counsel John Dean, MSNBC analyst Andrew Weissman, and former CNN legal analyst and masturbator Jeffrey Toobin. The meetings all have a distinct anti-Trump tilt to them. Another TV commentator that doesn't do these Zoom calls said it runs the risk of creating the impression that there is an agreement of cooperation or conspiracy across mainstream media entities. What?
Yeah, almost if what? You get a cabal of media personalities together weekly to talk about what they're going to go on TV and talk about Trump.
And all align their positions. You always thought that this probably would be going on since 2016 because the way the mainstream media all parroted the same thing, it's like they read the same.
Oh, you had the bombshell.
Do some people on the call align their positions as a result of their conversations? Duh. Some people defend it. Ankush Kandori, who wrote the political story, says, well, that could sound nefarious, but it's also the natural result of a group discussion that is working properly. People refine and clarify their positions. They find points of agreement that might surprise them. Their areas of disagreement become narrower and more precise. Right. Towards hating Trump. One of the guys, Conway, the husband of former Trump, what's her name? What was her name?
Kellyanne.
He has a podcast entitled Prosecuting Donald Trump. Yeah, don't worry about it. No big deal. Man, we have really, we really must thank our lucky stars for President Biden, because this guy probably has more experience, varied experience, than anyone else in Washington, D.C.
Besides, I used to drive an 18-wheeler. You know what I did?
He drove an 18-wheeler.
Was that while he was working for the logging company, while he was doing that?
This is a false claim that he has repeated before, that he used to drive an 18-wheeler. 2021, he declaimed at a tour of Mack Trucks, I used to drive an 18-wheeler, man. I only did it for part of the summer, but I got my license anyway. Those were fact-checked at the time and found false. The supporter told him, the only reason I have a pension is because of you. And Biden responded, well, you did get that done anyway. Besides, I used to drive an 18-wheeler.
What a weird flex of a lie.
You want to talk about double standards and how we've all just been trained. I mean, if Donald Trump exaggerated one thing by a little bit, he was pounced on as a, he cannot tell the truth. It's a prolific liar. And these things pop up almost daily.
And the media just, just folksy old Joe,
Uncle Joe, he's just, he's being folksy. It is annoying. He also is back to reading his teleprompter, as in every word on his teleprompter.
Ron Burgundy again.
Yep.
Imagine what we can do next. Four more years. Pause.
Four more years.
Pause.
Four more years.
Four more years. Pause. This is just an embarrassment. What's the deal with Stephen A. Smith?
I've always thought he was phony. That he just is a guy that whatever the big thing is out that day, he says the opposite. It's like when it used to be him and what's his name? Stephen A. Smith and the guy that's all the Cowboys fan.
I know you're talking about. Oh, Bayless.
Yeah.
Skip Bayless. Yeah.
It was always, you could never tell which one was going to argue. I swear they went and the producer held out a hat and they're like, all right, you're going to pull from that. Oh, look.
you're in favor of this.
Yeah. You hate LeBron today.
Well, he did come out and say some things that sounded rather positive toward Trump. And apparently they got to him.
On something that I made news about just a few days ago. Let me say this, ladies and gentlemen. Accountability is where everything needs to begin in this world. It's something I say quite often. I certainly never hesitate to hold folks accountable when mistakes or mishaps occur. So I'm certainly not about to run from it myself. I'm fully aware that I've been in the news over the last few days, paraded all over social media as well, after comments I made during my appearance on Fox News' Hannity last week with the one and only Sean Hannity himself. And I'm fully aware of the outcry that has ensued because of it. A lot of folks in Black America seem pretty pissed at me right now, from friends and loved ones to colleagues, contemporaries, and dare I say, even the NAACP itself. Quite a few folks were put off, if not flat out offended, after my words were interpreted as associating support for Trump from the Black community with all the legal issues he's facing.
But that's a fact. I mean, he wasn't lying. More and more of the Black community are identifying with Trump. They've seen a guy that's having the book thrown at him for because they want to get him. And well, the NAACP must have called him right up and said, look, your membership card's in danger here, buddy.
Yeah, we're going to revoke you.
For that, I sincerely apologize. To be clear, my words were misconstrued. I'm stating right here for the record that my words were taken out of context, misrepresenting and depicting me in a way I found every bit as insulting and disrespectful as folks in Black America evidently felt about what they thought I said.
How could your words be misconstrued for something that you wrote, you spoke, you had produced, and you put out on it's for everybody? It's not like there was a bunch of jump cuts out of a clip that someone put together. You said all those things.
Man, he really looks like a you know.
That's the Bill O'Reilly. I endorse this by writing it.
Right.
Well, that's what you did, Stephen. You endorsed it all that.
Own it anyway. Because, you know, please know that I know the buck stops with me. I'm in the communication business. I've been here for 30 years. So regardless of whatever interpretation that accompanies any words coming out of my mouth, the responsibility ultimately lies with me first and foremost.
All right. I mean, I know what he said.
Mm-hmm. Now, somebody got to him in his ear, and he had to come out and do a groveling public apology to say that, oh, the things I said were misconstrued.
Now you look like a chump.
Yeah.
Before, you looked brave. You know, and people are like, wow, this guy, he's speaking his mind. And he wasn't wrong about anything he said. But now he's just been misconstrued.
By the things that he said.
That were clear. That black voters could identify with Trump because of, you know, and his more of his, all the piling on of his legal troubles is what's doing it. All right. When we return, Heather has answers. There was a brawl in a Louisiana high school, a big brawl. And a school officer had to break it up. Parents of the kids involved with the brawl weren't really upset that their kids were in a brawl. They're more upset with the way the brawl was broken up. That's next. It's the Shannon Berg Show. Big fight at a Louisiana high school. the Magnolia School of Excellence.
Always has this one of those.
Well, there was a fight. It was a brawl, a melee, if you will. The school resource officer decided to legally deploy some pepper spray to break up the fight and to disperse the crowd. The TV, KSLA TV, reported that parents reached out to express their anger that pepper spray had been used on their little angels. The school said, look, we pride ourselves in creating a safe environment, conducive learning, building strong minds and good hearts. As a part of our safety plan, we have a Shreveport police officer on campus to maintain a safe learning environment. During an altercation, an officer on duty made the decision to legally deploy pepper spray to disperse the crowd.
I mean, some of those sweet angels were there just trying to help. They were trying to break up the fight.
Yeah, they weren't there egging it on, saying, whoop his ass or whip her, whatever, yeah.
And they were just caught in the crossfire.
More pepper spray.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's not lethal. It's not harmful. Doesn't, you don't have, you're not disfigured after you have it. Yes, your eyes are going to hurt and burn, and you're not, if you breathe it in.
You're not going to die from it.
No, you're going to be in a great deal of discomfort, and that's what you deserve. At UT, the pro-Hamas crowd there is having difficulty getting their whole protest off the boards. DPS officers there are they dispersing? Are they just kind of guiding them?
Just kind of guiding them into an area.
Oh, there's a lot of cops there. They're not messing around there. Well, good. All people are, I guess, South Carolina. The cicada apocalypse has begun. Trillions of cicada have emerged. And in one county in South Carolina, the people there are so disrupted, they're calling the cops. they think that they're hearing sirens or a loud roar. I mean, that must be...
I'd love to hear them to see.
Me too.
Now, a recording of them. They can stay up there in South Carolina.
They what?
Oh, so just a recording of it.
We'll get some down here, won't we? They report flagging down deputies to ask them what the noise is all about. Cicada Geddon. About 40 miles northwest of Columbia. That's where they come out in the cooler areas first. Well, they say their collective noise can be as loud as jet engines. That could do damage to your hearing.
Also, not sleeping.
How do they sing all night? I guess they do. They're trying to. They're the male cicada is trying to attract a mate, right? Yeah. Well, I can't imagine flagging down a cop. What is that sound? Oh my God! I remember the first morning I woke up here before I even started working when I moved here 23 years ago, and there would have been a controlled burn muck fire, and I walked out my yard like, oh my God! I started running around panicking. You know, like, what's on fire? You know, you can smell it. You see the thick smoke. And these people riding their bike casually down the street. I said, what's on fire? And they're like, it's a controlled burn. I'm like, all right, I'm going to look that up. Thank you. Travis Kelce has made a claim on a podcast with his brother Jason that there are 10 to 15 players in every single NFL locker room that believe the earth is flat. It's almost as many, I would have, in the NBA.
I think it's higher in the NBA.
He was asked, what percentage of the NFL believes the earth is flat like Kyrie Irving? Kyrie's not the only one that thinks it's flat. He's probably the most well-known. Dude, honestly, there are at least 10 to 15 guys in every single locker room that I would imagine. It's crazy. Jason backed up his brother's claim and thinks 15% of teams are made up of flat earthers. Then they blame it on concussions. They say, look, everyone in this game gets hit in the head. The coach was like, nobody on our team thinks like that.
Yeah, they're there. And it's not because of concussions. It's because they ain't doing any learnings. It's all football from the time that they're 9 years old and all the way through college. To be an NFL player, they're not exactly rocket scientists most of the time.
Well, but, I mean, that's a pretty big thing to believe. I mean, didn't they pay attention at all in, you know, maybe science class or history? No.
No.
Wow. Well, Patrick Queen for the Steelers openly stated he thinks the earth is flat. In February, he said, I don't believe in space. Like, you know, I'm religious, so I think we're on our own right now. I don't think there's, like, other planets and stuff like that. He said, I used to believe in the heliocentric thing, like we used to resolve around the sun, he said, and stuff. But then I started seeing flat earth stuff, and I was like, that's kind of interesting. They started bringing up some valid points. I mean, I don't know. It could be real. It could be bull. I don't know. Yeah, we used to resolve around the sun.
That's a lot.
I like that he got heliocentric, but then said resolve around the sun.
How'd he get heliocentric? Where'd that come from?
He heard a buzzword while watching a YouTube video.
Yeah, he looked it up, make sure he wrote it, could spell it.
All right, Heather.
Hello.
Heather has answers at gmail.com. If you'd like us to, you know, prowl over your problems, maybe have a solution, hear our opinions, and plus... Heather's just really downright nosy and wants to know about your personal life.
Everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Dear Heather, I was listening to your segment this week, and, well, let me just get into it. Here's my story. My husband and I are still pretty young, mid-late 20s, and we're expecting our first baby. We had a rough few years to start. Everyone thought we were too young. We were jumping into things. We needed to finish college first. Neither of us was mature enough for marriage. And my favorite, thanks, Grandma, this will never last. All rude and not helpful.
Wow.
We are still young, and I know there'll be more mistakes in our life together. By the way, we both finished college and would love our student loans to be forgiven, but we're not going to hold our breath or transfer my debts to others. We are just trying to get by, keep the bills paid, and grow together as a husband and wife while we are on year number 6. Last year, my husband had a boys' night out while I was visiting family out of town. Apparently, he cheated on me.
Oh.
It was awful. I was hurt. No, I was devastated. Shockingly, he was devastated by his immature actions. We have been doing therapy. I think what doesn't kill us makes us stronger. And seeing that we are now expecting, I would say that we have made it past that obstacle. However, the woman he cheated on me with decided to contact me.
Oh, no.
Then keep contacting me.
Oh.
She seemed annoyed that I didn't want to talk to her. And honestly, I wasn't meaning to be a jerk. But at one point, I said some nasty, mean things, hoping she'd just stop contacting me. And it seemed to work. My husband's a wonderful guy. He made a terrible, terrible mistake. I didn't think our marriage would survive, but here we are. I don't really need advice beyond what our therapist gives us, but I wanted to reach out to your audience to say that humans do dumb things. And if you're one of those who participated in those dumb things, hang your head and walk away. Don't do more damage. Tracy.
What is she talking about? The girl that he cheated with?
Do you remember the story on Monday? There was a girl who was the one night stand.
Yeah.
This sounds like this could have been the other woman or just a woman in the same kind of situation where
you're right.
The person reaches out and is like, why isn't the wife mad and leaving her husband?
He's oh my God, jerk. It could be the...
Right?
That would be wild, wouldn't it?
I love that she just says, you did something dumb. Hang your head, walk away. Let me move on with my life.
Yeah. Let me just throw this out there as a disclaimer for Boys Night Out. Boys Night Out doesn't mean we all go out and bang strange people. It just means we're dudes that want to go out and have a little, you know, a brotherly camaraderie together without it being encumbered by female companionship.
Yeah, dudes like this is who ruins it for everybody.
Yeah. Dude's mad, and I guarantee you that guy's never going out on another boys' night out ever again.
Well, I mean, and he's remorseful for it, too. He realizes he made a mistake.
So. Most guys do.
Oh.
Okay. Especially when they get caught. those details were left out, but, you know, yeah. How she found out, you know, so on and so forth. Good for them.
Yeah.
Well, good for them that they're going to work it out and save their marriage.
So
and
that kind of trailed away from what we're used to doing. I just felt like I had to share that one just in case, you know, just in case this was part of the other half of that story.
God, wouldn't that be interesting? Amazing. Because, yeah, she was upset that the other woman wasn't angry.
Right.
Huh.
It's very interesting.
Yeah, it is.
All right. Dear HH, EZ, and SB, I got caught wearing my wife's undies at work today.
Quit.
Look, it's laundry day, guys. How do you get caught wearing your wife's underwear at work?
I had some potentially acidic chemicals soiled on me at work, so I had to take off my uniform top and pants as soon as possible. However, I was wearing my wife's G-string. I don't want to elaborate. How do I go back to work now? I am beyond embarrassed. And this is my favorite part. I love our listeners. Larry and shipping.
Larry and shipping.
You don't. You quit. You move on.
Yeah. I mean, how many people saw him in his his wife's underwear? That's the... I mean, what do you say? Do they say anything? Like, oh, that's unique.
Okay, so I thought about this one, and he should totally say he lost a bet. He's a good sport. He lost a bet.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, I wonder what he did say. I mean, I imagine there's other people around you. You've got some caustic liquid on your body. You got to throw your pants off. Real quick, in front of everyone else in shipping.
What the hell? The acid ate the rest of my underwear away.
Where's the butt of these underwear?
Yeah, what acidic chemicals are they using in shipping?
Let's talk more about Larry's affinity for wearing his wife's underwear.
Hey, it's hot in that warehouse.
So
you're
right.
You need a little cooling, you know, a little lace on the all the boys.
Does Mrs. Larry in shipping know that he's wearing her underwear?
I don't know.
Well, yeah, was it under her blessing that he wore her underwear to work that
yeah,
day?
Yeah, so she's looking around in a drawer right now. Where is my red thong? I just saw it. Larry! Are you wearing my underwear again? Yeah, I think, I don't know. Or you play it into, you roll it into, you guys aren't into some funky role play with your wife? That's how we get down.
Yeah.
Yeah. You
should
see what.
Own it.
Yeah.
Own it, Larry. Come on.
She's wearing my boxers right now.
Now, see, that is more airy. If you wanted to talk about, like Eric said, wanting it to be breezy or whatever, I would think boxers are more airy than a G-string.
But yeah. You know, it's kind of like that warning your mother always make sure you got clean underwear in case you get in an accident. Mm-hmm. This is the make sure you're wearing the proper underwear.
Yeah. Make sure you're not wearing your wife's thong if you're playing around with toxic chemicals.
All right, I've got two more.
Oh, okay.
Not too long. My friend dresses inappropriately, and it's becoming an issue. So I have this one friend, and it's really embarrassing. I invited her to a family gathering, and she showed up in a bralette and booty shorts. I'm sorry to say that people were looking, and she kept getting upset that people were looking at her. She always dresses provocatively, but then acts annoyed when people look or try to talk to her.
I hate that.
Wait, what? What part do you hate?
I hate that women dress provocatively and then have a problem with people looking at them.
Oh, okay. We went to a pub recently, and she was wearing so little clothes that men were approaching her. She kept saying that she wanted to be left alone, but had her chest out and her tiny skirt. I could see her bra and it as it contrasted with her top, and she constantly flashed her underwear when she sat down. It was very awkward. I love her and her personality, but I can't keep inviting her out if she's going to dress this way. What can I do? Also, we aren't youth. We're nearly 40. Libby in Davenport.
She's nearly 40? She must be holding it together. She can get away with booty shorts and a bralette.
Rock it, girlfriend.
What's a bralette?
I think it's like a sports bra, but they make them fancy now. They make
and booty shorts are just like underwear, basically, right?
Just short shorts. They do make bikinis out of denim shorts now, that look like underwear, or maybe it's
but booty shorts are super tight, super short.
Yeah.
I would just be honest with her. Why? Well, you dress like a harlot, and you're upset that people look at you and talk to you and stare at you.
She likes the attention.
She must.
She loves. That's her. The type of person that is always like, "Oh, I don't understand why all the guys are bothering me every time I go out." Well, there you go. You're dressed
because your tees are hanging out, and you left nothing to the imagination in terms of your lower extremities.
You're dressed like a hooker. People are going to treat you like a hooker,
right? Obviously she's single.
I guess that's not even brought up. It's just when these two girls go out, her girl dresses skanky.
Yeah,
just stop going out with her. You're not comfortable that way.
Is she not comfortable with her because of her attitude about guys coming up and talking to her and her feigning that she's wants to be left alone, or she doesn't like to be seen with a girl that looks like a harlot?
Well, her first part, she talks about bringing her to a family gathering, so maybe that influenced her frustration, and then she realized, oh yeah, we've been going out, and she kind of looks like a skank every time.
Well, if it's your friend, you should say something. Right? Really? That's what you wore to my family gathering? I mean,
maybe screen her clothes first. Stop at her
house. Or next time, say, look, will you please wear some clothes? You know, and cover your, don't look like
bring
you're...
Bring a straight jacket.
As a friend and another woman, I would look at her in the eye and say, you know you love this attention, so stop bitching about it. If you didn't like this attention, you wouldn't dress like this. Just call her out on it.
Yeah.
I shouldn't be able to tell that you're wearing the same thong as Larry from shipping.
Yes. And one more. All right. I'm overweight and feel embarrassed going to the gym. I'm a male, and I want to change things up, so I'm debating on getting a gym membership. Lately, I've been thinking of the embarrassment I'm going to feel when I go to the gym and everyone there is regular size. Although I might be going with a friend, the people at my local gym are usually on the older side compared to me, adding to my embarrassment. What should I do to make it less awkward for me? Ben in Orlando.
I would not be worried about that. There are plenty of people in the gym that are just now getting into the gym that are overweight and trying to get, there are plenty of, you're not going to walk in there unless you're at a Gold's Gym or some kind of,
Meathead gym.
Yeah, Meathead. But if you're just going down to the
Planet Fitness.
Yeah, the Planet Fitness. You're going to find plenty of people that are overweight and working on the same thing you're working on. So
yeah, and don't worry about it. Just go in there and do your stuff and leave.
Right.
The people who quit are the ones who are worried about what other people are thinking.
Right. And look, you might take a whole approach here. Maybe a lot of people join a gym. And they stop going for whatever reason. That might be one of them. But intermittent fasting is a good thing. There are, some other things you do in conjunction with going to the gym. But certainly it wouldn't feel bad about going to the gym.
Yeah, no.
They don't have, special fat guy gyms. And not everybody in the gym is going to be looking like an Adonis, I can guarantee you.
Yeah.
Yeah. You might meet some other fellow fatties in there and go have a quinoa salad with them afterwards.
Sounds good to me.
All right. One more?
That's it.
Oh, that's it?
That's it.
All right. Heather has answers at gmail.com is the address. Heather has answers at gmail.com. We do it once a day around these here parts. Thank you, Heather.
Thank you.
Everybody's, at my age anyway, prostate cancer. Who just, was that what OJ had? I think it was.
Yes.
You got to eat right or, do this. My doctor says stand up more because I sit and I ride a motorcycle all the time. There's another claim out there. A doctor by the name of Daniel Kelly has revealed that masturbating lowers your risk of prostate cancer.
How high is it normally then? Because I think there should be no people dying of prostate cancer.
One Harvard study found that men that ejaculated 21 times a month were up to a third less likely to get the disease compared to men that only did so between 4 and 7 times monthly. It's regardless how you achieve the orgasm, but as long as you have plenty of them. They say it will do no harm, frequent ejaculation, and should therefore form part of a man's healthy lifestyle.
Should be part of your daily routine, like shaving and brushing your teeth.
They say although the mechanisms aren't completely understood, the studies fit with the idea that ejaculation reduces prostate cancer by decreasing the concentration of toxins and crystal-like structures that can accumulate in the prostate and potentially cause tumors. It may also offer the immune response within the prostate, reducing inflammation, a known risk factor for cancer development, or by increasing immune defense against tumor cells. Although, they say alternatively, by reducing psychological tension, ejaculation may lower the activity of the nervous system, which prevents certain prostate cells from dividing too rapidly. 1 in 8 men will have prostate cancer at some point in their lives. But thousands are diagnosed once it's already spread, making it the second most common cancer death for men next to lung cancer. I didn't know that. I don't see you trying to envision. I mean, this is an important development, and cancer is always an issue. I'm trying to think of a suitable PSA that will support kind of lowering the stigma about being a chronic masturbator.
Also, who's the celebrity that comes out for this PSA as well?
It is the comedian who got in trouble for masturbating in front of the...
Oh, Louis C.K.
Louis C.K. Louis C.K. is a perfect spokesperson for it.
I'm Jeffrey Toobin, and I'm masturbating against prostate cancer. I'm just ready. They bring Tom Brady out for it. I'm Tom Brady here to talk to you about masturbating to stop prostate cancer.
Oh, yeah. People always wonder why my right arm is stronger than my left arm.
How did I get to be the GOAT?
a very vigorous masturbation program.
Remember, I like the deflated balls.
That's awesome. I mean, you shouldn't be. You used to bring shame. You couldn't do it. You weren't supposed to do it. You know, you go blind. You make sure no one catches you doing it. You're, you know, embarrassed if your mom walked in or your wife.
Now it's like our doctor is going to start prescribing it. Like, Larry, I think you're being a little tense, so...
I want you to bop your baloney 3 times a day.
I've gone ahead and get you... here's a prescription for a special lotion, and 3 times a day.
Or the Hydra Pulse thing that I got from the men's clinic. I can explain it to my wife when she sees it in my shower. Honey, I'm trying to keep her getting prostate cancer here. Give me a break. All right. Do I have anything here? I don't know.
Nope.
When we return... People are making a big deal out of the overtime pay now because if you're salaried now, a new law means you'll get overtime pay for the, you know, if you're salaried, you know, they expect you to work. But I think the result is going to be that you're just not going to be working any more than 8 hours a day. We'll also get to your remarks. It's the Shannon Burke Show.
Florida Man Radio.
Local government. 13-year-old girl, Emma, in Wyoming. She's a Girl Scout. Selling some cookies after school. Right there on her mom's property on Main Street in Pinedale. When they were approached by code enforcement officer. She was driving an animal control, the town's animal control vehicle, and didn't identify herself as code enforcement. But she couldn't wait to write some tickets. She informed them that they could not block the sidewalk. The mother and daughter pulled their stand back onto the driveway and continued to sell cookies for 2 more days before the woman showed up again
and handed them some citations. She showed up and handed me 3 parking tickets, totaling $400. I responded that I complied and with what she had asked and had moved off the sidewalk. She said the tickets aren't just for being on the sidewalk and that this is for your daughter's safety. A $100 fine for parking on the sidewalk, a $150 fine for unlawful obstruction, and another $150 fine for a municipal code that said there needs to be at least 5 feet of unobstructed passage on the sidewalk.
If they weren't on the sidewalk anymore, though, there's plenty of unobstructed passage on the sidewalk.
I hate this person. I know exactly who this person is, too. She's a dog catcher. She's a lesbian. She's very angry. She hasn't been able to find any dogs to throw into a little tiny cage. She needs to do something horrible to somebody or something.
And a child was selling cookies on the road in front of their house.
She didn't identify herself as code enforcement. She didn't say what I was doing was illegal. She didn't say she would even or even could write me a ticket. She didn't say that I couldn't sell there anymore. And she really, all she really said was you shouldn't block the sidewalk. When the code enforcement officer told her the family would not like her blocking the property, Fairbanks, the lady said, I responded, with the Fairbanks are my parents, and they don't care. She said, okay, well, I just recommend you don't block the sidewalk. She received 2 verbal requests to relocate her stand outside the right-of-way and closer to her parents' property. Despite these requests, the stand remained on the sidewalk, prompting the issuance of 3 citations. Her brother got the matter put on the agenda for town council meeting. At the meeting, the mayor dismissed all of their concerns. They got a lawyer, were able to get 2 of the tickets dismissed. Code enforcement officer admitted later to my brother that she was having a bad day on Friday. I told you.
Yep, she was angry.
She didn't realize my brother had any siblings. Is that to say that she knew I was really part of the Fairbanks family? She wouldn't have written me a ticket. I mean, this, you'll never be able to fire this employee. And she's animal control. Can an animal control officer write you a code enforcement? What kind of city official writes a handful of tickets to a girl selling Girl Scout cookies?
Yeah, in a driveway. Wasn't in anybody's, wasn't in a public area, wasn't in all that. They were in their grandparents' driveway selling cookies. And she just, yeah, you're right. She just, you know, she screeched that truck to a stop when she saw that.
All the dogs are in there, slammed to the front of the truck, in front of the little cage. Oh, I hate that type of person. It's like an HOA person, you know?
Yeah, she needed something to let out her anger, and she decided it was a 13-year-old girl selling Girl Scout cookies.
I saw a story, I think yesterday, as I'm scrolling, it was a Ring doorbell camera footage of a HOA dingbat explaining to this woman that she was leaving a ticket and a fine for $150 because a tree near her home had too many small, tiny little sprig branches with leaves on them along the trunk.
Then she wanted to go there and just like peel the tree a little bit.
She wasn't going to do it. She wanted them to do it and fine them for not doing it. Imagine that. I've been doing a lot of time if I lived in a homeowner's. I do live in one. Mine's voluntary, and they're not dicks. And it's very cheap, and I only enter so I can win yard of the month.
That's all your dues go to is the chance to win yard of the month
every
year.
That's right. And the entrance of our little neighborhood, the little brick thing on it's a separated road. There's a little brick entrance that has a name and all that. It's been slammed. I mean, every time that thing is rebuilt, it's destroyed again. So they need money for that type of stuff as well.
Cover up where the drunk drivers keep slamming
into. I think they finally went with just a small little, tiny little piece of marble, so they went to hire a brick mason. Let's get to these remarks, shall we, from the Florida Man Radio app. Powered by Morris Family Farms and Morganic Meats.
The app is a way to, if you're new to the show, familiarize yourself with it by going back in the archives and listening there. Don Miller's archives are up there as well. Bubba's got his own, you know, vehicles. And at the bottom, you can call the show, text the show from the app, and at the bottom, there's a little microphone. Hit that, baby. Here we go.
Hey, guys. At the top of the show, you talked about a national threat and security and attack on our soil. I totally agree. Seeing it coming for the last year, maybe 2 years, I kind of called this. But yet the Democrats keep wanting to disarm America, take guns away, make us register, the gun laws, disarm us, whatever they want to do. Well, guess what? They can eat me. I'm a Twinkie.
What does that mean? So that means a twink?
Oh, no.
There was no sexual connotation to that, was there?
Having 50% of the vehicles be electric by 2030 is possible if the government confiscates 90% of the vehicles currently on the road that are powered by gas or diesel or propane or natural gas or whatever else. They could do it, but I don't think it'd be too popular.
Well, I'm trying to remember that used car buyback deal that Obama had. Was that to get old gas guzzlers off the road? And was the was the government buying them? That was just a weird.
Those were Hunter Biden's favorite crack dealers. So Daddy Brandon helped them out.
Okay, then they erased that from history. Like a Solyndra debacle.
It was the cash for clunkers.
Cash for clunkers. That was it.
I'm trying to, but it is very hard to find. It's like you got to go down a little bit to find information on it.
It was an embarrassment.
I'm guessing the climate emergency declaration and the terrorist attack will depend on how Trump is doing in the polls coming closer to the election. I could see a terrorist attack on some voting place, or he can do climate emergency and declare that there'll be no in-person voting. And you'll have to use drop boxes or mail-in ballots only. Be-do-be-do.
I think they pull that kind of stuff. That's why they're going to trigger some serious protests.
Yeah, there'll be too many people aware of that.
Hey, Shannon. Hey, I got an idea for the universities. They should set up a Festivus poll on each campus. Then the kids on the way to and from class could swing on the pole and air their grievances and then get on their way to class. And not have all this BS going on. Be-do-be-do.
Can Governor DeSantis please keep us out of Biden's environmental emergency? Can Florida opt out?
I doubt it. I mean,
we would fight it.
Oh, yeah. There'd be a bunch of states that would take this to the Supreme Court. And maybe for the first time in history, Supreme Court will see.
That's an overstep.
It's an overstep, and it doesn't, you know, to declare a national climate emergency when the discussion is global climate, you know, and to do, you know, on a tiny portion of the Earth's surface really doesn't make any sense.
What's up, guys? Remember here? That's something. You protest in front of Schumer's house, you get arrested. You protest in front of the Supreme Court justice, you don't get arrested. You protest in front of Trump Plaza, don't get arrested. It's not only the Jews, it's the conservatives as well. Total double standard. This country's falling to crap. Be-do, be-do.
What's up, fellas? Yeah, man, that dude with the bullhorn at Columbia, boy, do you know, he's probably up to his eyeballs in fat, purple hair, poo nanny. I mean, they're throwing themselves at him. He's a boss around there. And I think it's great how the libs are getting the ass end of one of these protests that has no definition like BLM was. Like, all these, there was no goal. It's just destruction and chaos. So I think that's hilarious.
Yeah, the main reason those kids are protesting is because they're a bunch of spoiled brats. They've never accomplished anything in their life outside of some kind of educational accomplishment. Their parents have given them everything they wanted. Their life has no meaning. They have no self-worth because they've never done anything of any kind of significance. So they feel if they can jump onto a cause and they're not a minority or part of some protected group, that this will give them some kind of standing.
That's a good point. They're not a minority or a protected group. They're just white. We got to find a way to wiggle our way out of this oppressor status that we hold.
Hey guys, way too close to the microphone guy here. I'm just thinking about all this defunding of the police. How are we supposed to arrest all these cicadas? Or afford the zip ties we need to wing cuff them? Way to think that one out, progressives.
It's flat.
So, how's everybody doing, first off? So, regarding this flat Earth thing, I'm sure everybody has seen pictures from outer space looking at Earth, and it clearly shows that it's round. What is the deal with these people? I just don't understand it. It's round, just like the other planet.
Sir, all of the photos you've ever seen from space have been manipulated by NASA to maintain the secret.
Mm-hmm, absolutely fake.
Hey, the segment's not called Heather Takes Advice. This woman calls in trying to give everyone advice. That's not the part of the show.
Shannon, I find your term for us overweight Palestinians very, very offensive. We like to be called unthin. So please use that from now on. Thank you. Bidu. Bidu.
The unthin. That's a good one.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, I believe I would have let whatever chemicals were on me just burn, baby, burn. I would have never took them britches off and let everybody see me wearing no G-string, for one. For two, I would never have my wife's G-string on. He got some weird, kinky stuff going on. Damn, brother. Golly.
Yeah. Phil, you got acid on there. No, it's all right. It's eating through your smoke's good. No, I got it. It's no big deal. Don't worry about it.
It'll be fine.
Well, how big is Larry's wife? Jesus.
Hey, Shannon. So, liberal Larry got caught wearing his husband's underwear at work. Nah, we all knew it was just a matter of time.
So to that story that Heather read about the girl who was devastated because her husband cheated, and he said he was devastated. Yeah, right. I'm sure he was feeling devastation as he was pounding that. Come on.
Yeah. In the future, as much background, important, like dates, times, how you caught him cheating, is it, someone at the office?
He's feeling a lot of shame.
And I guarantee the devastation came when he realized that he was caught.
Yeah.
That's the devastation.
To the guy from Heather Has Answers who's self-conscious about going to the gym when overweight, most of the people don't care. And quite honestly, a lot of them will be rooting for you to succeed in your quest. They're not all musclehead jerks. And even some of the people you think might be probably aren't.
I follow a guy named Dave Dana on X. I don't know why I started following him. He was a huge guy. And he's lost like 200-something pounds. He chronicles it on X. He got so many supporters that Arnold Schwarzenegger caught his eye. And he invited him out to California to do a workout with him. And pretty good story.
Hey, this is Dan Winter Park. Hey, Jeffrey Toobin is online talking about the Trump trial. Hey, that's pretty whack.
Hey-o.
It's good that guy is joining a gym trying to lose weight, but if he loses too much, he's not going to be able to join Fatties for Palestine, so he better figure out what's important in life.
That's right. Fat liberation is Palestinian liberation.
Well, dang, I should be clear of the prostate cancer ever since I bought the penis pump there on Bubba's website that he sells. I guess I'm good to go.
Pump it up, buddy. Pump it.
Tom Brady here. Let's talk about balls, especially
empty balls.
Hey, I think I deserve a little bit of props for being way ahead of that masturbation report. And I'd like to thank Kate and some of the other women members of your audience for the motivation to do so. And based on the report, I will up the vigor and frequency. And with that said, I've been masturbating ever since.
And really, hats off to Kate for fighting prostate cancer as hard as she has been.
And keeping that guy possibly immortal.
You guys are cracking me up today. I've never laughed so hard. The guy that's worried about the gym, go there for a couple months, and when you start slimming up, they will see all the good work you're doing. And based on my calculations, I nor my son, or whenever he decides to give me a grandchild, should have prostate cancer. Beedoo beedoo.
I love hearing stories about guys that parents that have like teenage sons, and like the kid will not stop masturbating. <It's> like...
Tom Brady again. Want to know why I was so good at throwing footballs? It's all in the wrist.
Stephen A. Smith is basically the Al Sharpton or Jesse Jackson of the sports arena. We got a Bud Light sports up more than we did with just the beer itself. And poor Larry and shipping. It's too bad he didn't have Heather's quick wit and thinking, because that window of opportunity is now slammed shut. And I'll tell you one other thing. If you listen to Florida Man Radio, you spread the word, and I bet you his coworkers know of this. Beedoo-beedoo.
Hey, did you hear about Larry and shipping? He's wearing girls' underpants. Anybody ask him why? He said it was laundry day.
She was a lesbo who was never a Girl Scout when she was a little girl, and her name was Karen.
Hey, Shando, I'm a career firefighter and code enforcement officer up in here in upstate New York, and we've had people call in and complain that kids are selling lemonade and cookies on the street by their houses before. So what we end up doing is we get a hold of all the cops in the area, and we get all of our guys in the trucks, and we go to their stands and buy them out of everything.
Awesome.
Tell Karen to...
That's awesome. I can't imagine why anyone would have a problem with a kid selling lemonade or cookies on the sidewalk.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to be that code enforcement person, it's like, okay, you can't have it at the stand in the street, or
right.
You can't have it in front of somebody's business that doesn't want you there. Okay, but it's in front of their house, in their driveway. They moved it off the sidewalk. Okay. And you're throwing a fit. It's just people just can't be happy in the world sometimes. They have to see misery.
I always stop, especially if his kid's in the neighborhood, you know, especially if I'm on the motorcycle, because then you hear a motorcycle come out and immediately their parents bust out of the front door. What's going on here? It's here to buy some lemonade, man.
Don't be embarrassed to go to the gym. You're going to feel a lot better about yourself. Just go ahead and get on the elliptical if you can't run a treadmill. You'll still get a cardio workout. And you're going to get really sweaty. Trust me.
Wasn't the Clash for Clunkers to help bail out the automakers when they were in financial distress?
Right.
Because that was like at the end of... that was around 2008, wasn't it? When that happened.
I think that automakers got... some type of grants to use to buy old cars so they could facilitate the sale of new cars.
It was supposed to, so people would get rid of their old cars to buy new cars, and right. It didn't work. No. People just sold their old cars and then didn't buy new cars.
Yeah. I like the Cash for Clunkers program. It got a lot of junky cars with Obama stickers off the road.
Hey, guys. You know, the greatest spokesperson for that prostate cancer avoidance therapy would have been, hands down, Pee Wee Herman.
Oh,
I
could
just imagine him talking, him laughing, and then when he got real serious. But he would even be able to have put that on his show. Anywho, hey, what was the source of that article so that I might use that out on my dates? when I'm asking for a little help. Be-do-be-do.
Am I getting a handy? What, Pee Wee Herman die of prostate cancer? Or some kind of cancer?
It was some type of cancer.
Yeah.
Ah, Shane's on an other guy. It wasn't hung low. I had the environmental accident yesterday in bathroom. Had to call plumber. Cost $200. Note to self. Don't eat the spicy curry and Taco Bell bean burrito in 1 hour. Oh, beedo beedo.
No, he had lung cancer and blood cancer.
Ooh.
Purple Hair Poo Nanny. That'd be a great name for what? Like a K-pop band or something?
So I think the best people to go to promote this masturbation prostate cancer thing would be Snoop Dogg and Martha Stewart.
I'm not seeing that.
For the guy who doesn't like going to the gym, find the biggest guy in the gym, introduce yourself. He's probably the nicest guy there, and he'd be more than willing to give you some advice.
Like the biggest muscle head guy there?
Find the biggest guy in the gym, beat him up, then you're king of the gym.
Start a fight with him.
Hey, got an idea. Do not go to the gym. Get yourself a trade. You can be a roofer, a plumber, concrete guy. You'll make tons of money, and you'll save on all the gym memberships. Beedoo, beedoo.
I think there's a weight limit for roofers. Been like this. You ever seen a fat roofer?
Well, I mean, as much as they sweat, I hope not.
No. So. I mean, plus
you're climbing a
chance
bladder.
You could fall through the damn roof. Those are the remarks for this hour. Powered by Morris Family Farms. We're getting dark.
Yeah, you know, we always talk about, you know, political rivalries, especially going on right now. It's a big thing, and we talk about how there just seemed to be more decorum back in the day here in between the House and the Senate, and government was nicer, and it wasn't. They were having duels and beating each other with canes.
We need to go back to fighting. Like,
yeah,
physical.
We need to bring it back like a fighting arena.
Yeah, yeah. And then girls go and can fight the other chicks, right? Like, Marjorie Taylor Greene could fight Maxine Waters. that's next. Hang on, it's the Shannon Burke Show. Boy, it's getting hairy out there on these college campuses. USC cops there have their batons out. It's quite, let me see if we can get any of it to air here. I mean, thousands of students and hundreds of police officers. Here's USC. The cops are busting on, what are they called? The telescopic baton stinger. What's that thing called?
All right, that's a good description of it.
Yeah, I got one on my nightstand. Are those legal?
No, I mean, if it isn't, you don't have one on your nightstand.
The real question is, when does this end? And how does it end? Because, you know, they could protest. Israel's not going away. There's a story in the Stack today about the Rafah's coming up. They got a date for it. They're gearing up for Rafah. Rafah's going to happen. And I would imagine after Rafah, they might wrap up.
Yeah, I mean, they really haven't done anything in the past, 2 weeks now?
Right. And these protests have grown more and more. They've grown stronger. They've grown in size. They've grown in violence. And they've shut down campuses, and
I don't know what they
nothing's happening. Nothing's happening right now in Gaza, but it's about to. Maybe they're trying to get. I mean, when once Rafah fires up,
oh, they're gonna lose their mind.
Absolutely.
Once you start seeing bombs being dropped again and tanks rolling through, they're gonna lose their mind. But I mean, I still don't know understand what they think they're going to do. It's the same. The girls that. We don't know what we're protesting because you don't. You have no idea what you're actually protesting. The right. People at Columbia want Columbia to stop investing in Israel.
Okay. But
the Google guys, same thing.
Let's just say people that they said, okay,
will stop investing in Israel. However, I don't know what their investments are, but whatever. They say they agree to do that in a timely fashion that makes sense financially for them. And then do the protests go away? No, it's still stop the, you know, ceasefire, stop the genocide, blah, blah, blah. You haven't heard ceasefire in a while because there's no fire going on right now. But no one's going to divest from Israel.
But no, I mean, it doesn't make any sense. Those people that are complaining that they're, you got to divest for Israel, don't know how much money that is also being invested in, I don't know, Iran and Saudi Arabia and all those other countries, because that's what money does. Money gets invested. I don't care who it is. If there are more places in North Korea that were worth investing in, they'd be investing in North Korea because they don't care. It's money is being transferred. They don't care who it's going to.
And any of these professors and employees with Columbia, if they're in the school's pension or 401k plan, odds are they're invested in Israel and oil and gas and mean stuff. Because they're mean. Shall we get dark?
Yes, let's do that.
It's Disturbing History with EZ. There's a lot of history out there. Some of it isn't in the books.
Decorum back to our government.
Decorum.
We have them. Did you see the point? That one point when McCarthy put his finger in the one guy's face and Gates in them and how disgusting it is the way our government's being run right now.
Oh, and Schumer warning Gorsuch, you'll suffer the threatening SCOTUS.
I think for some reason there's times where we have this. A mythical vision of what our government used to be, like that's all a bunch of guys in suits and the southern gentlemen, they go in there and I've got things to say.
Right. This is against decorum and follow the rules. And very, very orderly and gentlemanly.
Which doesn't make any sense because we were a very rough and tumble country during that time period already. To think that we just found a bunch of stiff shirt guys and that's all the only people we sent doesn't make any sense. But throughout our government's history, we've had a lot of guys that had rivalries and feuds.
One side of the other, across the aisle.
Political disagreements.
Right.
And they've a lot of times led to, some sorts of violence or other things. And very early on, 1798, Matthew Lyon and Roger Griswold. I know you remember who Matthew Lyon and Roger Griswold are.
Oh, the great Roger Griswold.
Mm-hmm, yep, they were both charged with disorderly conduct in Congress. Connecticut's Roger Griswold and Vermont's Matthew Lyon never got along. In 1798, Lyon actually spat tobacco in Griswold's eye and accused the Federalists of being a coward.
You're a coward. What did that get you?
Really didn't do anything. Again, it was kind of the thing. So when the Republicans spoke against the threat of war with France that year, Griswold saw his chance for revenge. Griswold supported then-President John Adams' hawkish approach to France and took Lyon to task for opposing the war. It's another coward who doesn't want to go to war.
You don't want war, you're a coward, boy.
In late January, the House of Representatives met to decide whether to expel Lyon for spitting in Griswold's face. Unfortunately, Griswold's Federalist backers couldn't get enough votes to remove Lyon, and look at that. Party politics played out again, and he stayed. So, old Roger Griswold was not a man that would take a spitting in the face and just accept it. He is a man of principle. The Connecticut politician decided he was going to do it himself. On February 15th, one day after the vote failed, Griswold grabbed a hickory cane and walked up to Lyon in the chamber and began beating him about the head and shoulders.
Wow. With a hickory cane.
With a hickory cane.
Hickory's very hard wood.
Well, Lyon's apparently a very tough man himself, a true old Vermontian. I don't know what they call
Vermontian.
Themselves. Yeah. So he grabbed a nearby fire stoker, and they were, at that point, having themselves a good old-fashioned stick-to-steel fight.
On the floor.
On the floor.
Wow.
Other members of Congress rushed to pull the men apart as they beat each other mercilessly. Eventually, the men were separated. However, the awful fight was immortalized in a lot of political cartoons. If you've ever seen the ones, the two guys, it's pretty, you've probably seen it multiple times. Political cartoons, there's two guys standing with, look like they're dueling with the swords.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's supposedly those two.
Oh, I've seen. Yes, yeah, they said in a famous painting.
Yeah. When Andrew Jackson faced off against John Quincy Adams for the presidential election of 1828, it was a lot like America's now, and bad blood had long been simmering. The two rivals had faced off 4 years earlier, with Adams winning the first race. However, historians have uncovered no shortage of shady backroom political dealing in Adams' favor the first time around. Then, when 1828 rolled around, Adams used a second campaign to spread rumors about Jackson's wife, Rachel.
Well, like she was whoring around or something?
Yeah, well, Jackson ended up winning the vote, but poor Rachel died before he could be inaugurated. Angered over the passing, he blamed Adams' allegations for contributing to her death.
Do we know exactly what he said? Was it?
I have to look it up exactly what he said about her. I do believe he was kind of insinuating she was a bit of a harlot. So, on Inauguration Day in 1829, Jackson's supporters were riled up, and they stormed the White House after he was sworn in. Looking for Adams. Adams escaped out the back to exit to avoid the angry crowd, seeking revenge for their leader and his late wife. But while Adams may have been able to skirt away from the situation, others weren't so lucky. One socialite, Margaret Smith, was an eyewitness to the ugly event on that fateful January day. That's right. There were other times there were riots in the Capitol that weren't January 6th. It's weird that that's the only date we can ever seem to remember.
Right.
She wrote to a friend about CMN fighting at the White House, and she stated ladies fainted, men were seen with bloody noses, and such a scene of confusion took place as it impossible to describe.
Ladies fainted?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my. Clutch those pearls.
Clutch pearls and hit the ground.
Oh, my. At the sight of men, roughhousing?
Oh, yes. Ruffians. Ruffians invaded the White House. The 1830s were a time of deeply partisan politics. Among other issues, Democrats believed major newspapers were slanted in the favor of the rival Whig Party. Political opponents railed against news coverage for years. That's right. Fake news existed even then. Controversy of the bias reached a fever pitch in 1838. Earlier that year, Maine Rep. Jonathan Silley, he delivered a speech on the floor of the House. In it, he accused newspaper editor John Webb of taking bribes from Whig politicians to write stories favoring the Whig Party.
Aha!
Well, John Webb is a man of principles, so he was furious at the allegation. He wrote to Silley challenging him to a duel.
Like a swords? No, guns?
With guns, yes.
Yeah.
Well, it's a little hard to actually get a threat to a congressman. So he had another congressman, Kentucky Representative William Graves, deliver his letter saying, hey, Mr. Graves, I'm one of your constituents. Take this letter and take it to one Jonathan Silley and have him know that I am ready for a duel. Well, when Graves met Silley to hand him the
you
mean
challenge, it. You're standing by. I mean, you're ready to die for your.
Well, when
idea.
Graves met Silley to hand him the written note for the duel, the main politician just refused to take the letter. I guess if you don't take it's kind of like a summons. If you
don't touch it, then you don't.
So it was like, I don't know. Not dueling today. I'm just not going to grab this duel letter.
He knew that it was a duel challenge.
Offended by the perceived slight, though, Graves himself said, all right, then I'm going to challenge you to a duel. Now, a man that has no other than he was there to deliver a letter is now so deeply offended. He, too, wants to duel this guy. And frustrated with Graves' anger, Silley accepted with this duel.
He did?
Yep. Despite not having any prior ill will between the two of them, they agreed to a shootout in February of that year. On the fateful day, both Graves and Silley missed the mark on their first two shots. The third time proved to be a charm for Graves, though, and Silley was struck with a bullet from the Kentucky's man's gun and bled to death.
Man, that is, I mean, is any idea worth that risk? I mean, those guys were damn serious about it.
Why
not just fight?
These guys weren't even, no ill will with each other.
Right. Just because one got so angry at him that he didn't accept the duel.
Yeah, of another person that they had a duel. Weird. And the guy died for it. The 1830s were a fun time.
No kidding, man. Obviously in our common sense gun law, desiring D.C., they'll never allow a duel again. But
bare knuckle fight, yeah. Maybe.
I mean, it was certainly caused the frail to get out of the Senate, you know, in a timely manner.
Oh, just imagine Mitch McConnell getting his ass whooped in the Senate.
Oh, my God. How many people would just love to punch
Ted Lieu.
Oh,
God, little chubby cheeks of his.
I don't think we'd get anything done if that we actually allowed those. No. Roles. It would just be fight after fight after
Matt
fight
Gage
every day.
Would be fighting Swalwell. And,
but also, we'd definitely be picking much bigger guys to send as our representatives.
Yes.
Every one of our representatives would be old wrestlers.
Yeah, former WWE.
Longtime South Carolinian politician John C. Calhoun, his death in 1850, should have been a cause for remembrance. Instead, it proved to be the kindling that sparked a nasty pre-Civil War feud between a few lawmakers. The discord began at a memorial for Calhoun. Mississippi's Henry Foote and Missouri's Thomas Hart Benton started yelling insults at each other. That a memorial, you scoundrels.
Just out of nowhere. They saw each other already, like, your hair is bad.
They already hate each other, so it was kind of already bad blood. And then you brought them to a memorial, and you just yelling back and forth. Of course, violence didn't break out, but Vice President Miller Fillmore, he was alarmed by the situation and all the tension. So on April 3rd, Fillmore issued a warning to the chamber. A slight attack or even insinuation of a person's character often provokes a more severe retort, which brings out more disorderly reply, each senator feeling justification in the previous aggression. Smart words by Mr. Fillmore. If you continue, one guy yells about the other guy, and the other guy yells at, and then they yell back and forth, then but after a while, they just both hate each other. Well, 2 weeks later, Foote and Benton argued again in the Senate. During the spat, Benton moved towards Foote, believing himself to be in danger. The Mississippi senator pulled out a pistol and pointed at Benton. Thankfully, though, cooler heads did prevail, and other senators convinced Foote to put the gun down, and he did so. The men were separated without blood being shed, but nobody was hurt that day.
And that you could pull a gun on some guy in Congress,
and they just
and then put it away. Like, okay, all right, okay, all right,
come on.
Can you imagine if that happened today? Or you pulled a gun anywhere?
I'm just imagining of Lindsey Graham pulling a gun on somebody.
Yeah, hold it right there.
David Terry, David Broderick. They were part of the same political party, yet still found a way to fall into some violence. The men were both Californian Democrats in the 1850s, but on opposite sides of the slavery issue. David Terry, the Chief Justice of California State Supreme Court, was in favor of slavery and wanted California admitted in the Union as a slave state. David Broderick, a state senator, believed California should be a free state. Their friendship fell apart as their political disagreement deepened ahead of the Civil War. Then, in 1859, Terry lost re-election for a spot on the state Supreme Court. Enraged at his loss, Terry blamed Broderick's anti-slavery agitation for the failure. In a speech after the campaign, the pro-slavery politician insulted his former friend, Mr. Broderick. Broderick replied with his own public insults against Terry, and the fight was on. Terry challenged Broderick to a duel, and on September 13, 1859, the men met their fate. Broderick won a coin toss to choose the position. But in turn, Terry got to choose the weapons.
Oh.
Terry's choice, though, proved fatal. He picked pistols, which were unfamiliar to Broderick.
What are the choices?
It doesn't say what the list of ones were, but...
It could have been swords?
Swords or knives or...
Pointed sticks?
Yeah. Pillows and whatnot. Well, apparently Broderick was a dandy of a man who didn't know how to fire a pistol. So when the abolitionist gun misfired, Terry's did not, and there was one less David in the state of California. The anti-slavery politician died a hero for his cause. Meanwhile, Terry fled California to fight for the Confederacy.
And you weren't hit with a bullet, a proper bullet. It was like a round ball. Yeah,
and it sucked.
Just plowing through you.
Yeah, if you actually could hit somebody with it,
right.
It wasn't good. 1856. Massachusetts Senator Charles Sumner, he delivered one of the most divisive speeches in Senate history. On the floor in front of the entire gallery, Sumner slammed South Carolina Senator Andrew Butler of the issue of slavery in the southern states. Sumner, an abolitionist, used his speech to warn against admitting Kansas to the Union as a slave state, and he accused Butler of having a mistress.
Oh, that's low brow. There was no bro code back then?
He said his mistress, though, was not just a lady. The mistress was slavery.
That's right. His mistress was slavery?
Said the mistress ugly to others, who is chaste in his sight. I mean the harlot of slavery. Butler, though, he was getting destroyed in the speech, wasn't actually on the Senate that day.
No?
Oh, but he heard about it. He wasn't president of the Senate that day, but others were shocked about that speech. And 3 days later, South Carolina Representative Preston Brooks, who happened to be one of Butler's cousins, heard about said speech.
Wow.
The angry congressman rushed into the Senate and attacked Sumner with a metal-tipped cane.
All right.
Brooks beat Sumner over the head until he fell, striking him for over a minute before leaving the Senator bloodied and nearly unconscious on the floor.
Wow.
Finally, Brooks left the chamber. Other stunned senators actually rushed Sumner.
Did he get arrested for that?
No.
Well, he had a disagreement, and that's how they settled it.
Brooks was censured in the Senate and resigned from the House of Representatives. However, citizens in South Carolina were buoyed by his violent act and actually reelected him right afterwards.
Hell yeah, I'd reelect the guy.
He died in 1857, though, after a sudden bout with Croup?
Croup.
Okay.
Yeah.
What is croup? I don't know.
It's like a chest congestion thing, I think.
Oh, I did not know that one. As for Sumner, he ended up serving 3 more terms in the Senate. And today, historians recognize the caning of Charles Sumner as one of the key moments that pushed the country into civil war.
Wow. That's old school. And you know, it was accepted, you know, and I don't know for what reason, but especially accepted in our elected officials.
Again, we were violent then. That was a time that was still, we weren't civilized to the point where you want to say you're now. There was still.
But there was rarely consequence for your violence.
Because it was expected.
And if a guy agreed to duel with you, it was okay if you killed him. You wouldn't get in trouble.
Oh,
actually,
you'd
win, yeah. Wow, that's trippy.
Bowie Knife Potter. This man's going to show up here a couple times here. 4 years after the caning of Charles Sumner, another violent disagreement in Congress pushed the country further towards the Civil War. In 1860, Illinois' Owen Lovejoy was debating the ethics of slavery with Virginia's Roger Pryor. Lovejoy, an abolitionist, was arguing the practice when the Southern congressman jumped up and waved his fist in the man's face. Enraged at the show of disrespect, Wisconsin member John Fox Potter began screaming at Pryor. The pro-slavery congressman accused Potter of interfering in the debate. Pryor then challenged Potter to a duel, which was still pretty normal practice at the time. Old Bowie Knife Potter accepted the offer, but upped the ante. He would only fight if both men engaged in hand-to-hand combat with Bowie Knives.
Wow. Jesus.
Shocked by this challenge, Pryor said, no, I'm out. And he actually backed down.
So if you're challenged to a duel and you back down, do you lose the argument?
Yeah,
or?
You're a coward at that point. But he also didn't get stabbed by a giant knife.
Right.
Potter's vicious defense of abolition and Lovejoy's immediately won him fame, while Pryor retreated, earned scorn. Potter's colleagues nicknamed him Bowie Knife, and admirers from across the country mailed him knives. He was even presented with a 7-foot ceremonial knife inscribed with the pun to John Fox Potter, who will always meet a prior engagement.
I get it.
Kansas' admission to the Union was one of many factors leading to the Civil War, and Southern politicians demanded the Jayhawk State allow slavery upon its admission. Northern abolitionists wanted Kansas to be a free state. Disagreements over this soon led to violent actions. In 1858, the House of Representatives was debating the question of Kansas when Pennsylvania Republican Galusha Grow, one of the best names I could see I've ever
Galusha?
Seen. Galusha Grow. Him and South Carolina Democrat,
I will name him Galusha,
Lawrence Keitt, began yelling insults at each other. The two men were overcome by their emotions and started a fight, which led to dozens of other members of Congress joining the fray.
Nice. Chairs flying.
Mm-hmm. Soon the chamber descended into a violent brawl. More than 30 members of the House began throwing punches at each other. Police were called, but the threat of arrest didn't deter them. Then came Bowie Knife Potter. He edited things
started
in a way
stabbing away.
Nobody expected, along with fellow Wisconsin Rep. Cadwalder Washburn.
Say the first name again.
Cadwalder Washburn.
Cadwalder, get in here. Cadwalder.
Bowie Knife, he waded out into the middle of this fray and snatched the toupee off the top of Mississippi Rep. William Barksdale's head. Of course, Barksdale was a bit shocked by the theft, and the rest of the House members were quite well, too. Fistfighting quickly devolved into laughing, and the men from both parties paused their attacks to make fun of Barksdale's newly bald head. The lull in the fighting allowed the sergeant at arms to separate the combatants, and the brawl ended.
Yeah, we had a sergeant of arms who would allow you to duel.
Yeah. And we'll end finally. In 1886, Indiana Governor Isaac P. Gray was expected to fill a vacated U.S. Senate seat, so the state's General Assembly held a vote to replace the Democrat and his lieutenant governor. Everyone expected Senate President Alonzo G. Smith, another Democrat, to win, but Smith did not. Instead, Republican Robert S. Robertson, woo, he unexpectedly won the vote for lieutenant governor. Bitter over the result, the Indiana General Assembly members tried to thwart Robinson's attempts to take office for weeks. On February 23, 1887, the Indiana Supreme Court ruled in Robertson's favor. The next day, the Republican walked into the state capitol and demanded his seat. Amid furor in the chamber, a doorkeeper grabbed Robinson by the throat. In local news accounts, they claim the man threw Robinson some 15 or 20 steps from the 20 feet from the steps. Angered by his loss, Smith ordered other attendants to remove Robertson from the building. Pushing and shoving led to fighting between the factions. Robertson made a speech to his supporters outside, leading to another fight. Finally, they decided we probably should get the guy that we voted in to actually get his seat. Ultimately, he got his own revenge of sorts when Gray ended up being passed over for the U.S. Senate victory. The violent upheaval had long-term consequences, too, as one of the several events that led to the passing of the 17th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, calling for the direct election of senators by the public and not just by a, you know, forum.
Wow. Whole lot of... When did they stop dueling, I wonder? When was the last duel?
That's a good question.
And who was the guy, the poor guy that suggested it? You know, I think we ought to stop this duel. Are you a pussy? I mean, pretty barbaric.
I'm trying to see if there's a...
And what are you going home with? Hey, I got some news for you, sweetheart. I'm in a duel. Coming up a duel next month. So...
And of course, and he's like, I'm thinking about, you know, maybe not doing it. And his wife's like, I married some pussy. What is going on?
You better get in there and duel. All right. When we return, I'm going to tell you, they raise them tough in Texas. I'm going to tell you the story about a 10-year-old Texas kid who was regaling some Texas investigators with a story about how he once killed a man. 2 years prior. It's the Shannon Burke Show. Ten-year-old in South Texas was being questioned by police for allegedly threatening to kill a classmate. And somewhere in this questioning, he said, it ain't the first time I killed a man. I killed a man a couple years ago. 10 years old. He told officials that he had shot and killed a man in 2022 as he was being questioned for threatening to kill a student. Gonzales County Sheriff's Office say the child told investigators firsthand information about the shooting death of a 32-year-old Brandon O'Quinn Raspberry on January 18th, 2022 in Nixon, Texas, a little east of San Antonio. He was visiting his grandfather in an RV park that day, a few lots down from Raspberry. He told investigators he took the pistol from the glove box of his grandfather's truck, entered the RV belonging to Raspberry, and shot him, killing him. He said he'd never met the man before. He had seen him walking around the RV earlier that day. The kid was also asked if he was mad at Brandon for some reason, or Brandon had ever done anything to make him mad. And he said, no.
I shot a man just to watch him die.
And he was seven. The investigators found the gun used in his murder at a pawn shop in a nearby town and matched all the shell casings from the scene. But because he was under the age of 10 at the time of his crime, he cannot be charged in connection with the homicide. Man, I think there's no way in hell that this does not turn out to be a bad adult.
Yeah, this kid needs to be locked up. This is a bad person. There's no saving this kid.
I mean, can't they, like, put him in some type of remanded treatment? You know, I mean, he can't be charged with a crime, but because he admitted to killing a man at the age of 7, don't officially go, yeah, well, we can't cross. See you later. Have a nice day, Timmy. Or do they go, wait, we can't just let Timmy out in the world right now. He threatened to kill a classmate. And then in questioning, cop to a murder at the ripe old age of 7.
I mean, this is the one where you, because he threatened a classmate, you throw every book that you can at him for threatening a classmate just to keep him away from everything.
He's 10, so now he can be charged with a crime.
Yeah, for the threatening.
Finding out he was 7 years old when he committed that murder, a senseless murder. At that, it's just tragic. It's kind of hard to wrap your head around it, says the homicide victim's brother. He said Brandon was a loving person. He'd give you the shirt off his back to anybody. He has been charged in connection with the threat, awaiting his court case. I mean, can you even, so it's not on his permanent record even?
No.
You can't say when he goes to a court date for threatening his classmate, you can't bring it up?
Probably not.
Your Honor, this guy did kill a man at age 7, so...
We probably should go ahead and throw the book at him for threatening to kill a classmate, because we'll know he'll do it.
Yeah. I mean, you have to bring it up, because we know that he's got the capability of killing people. God, that's horrible. That guy's just going to walk the streets. I saw the speaker was at Columbia. Speaker Johnson. What was that all about?
The only clip I saw there is a clip of him speaking now.
Is there?
Yeah. He is calling on the president to resign. The president of Columbia.
Oh.
Not now. Biden.
Can you send me that clip?
Yeah, I'm sending it right now.
I think there's no two ways about it. She must resign. And either Kathy Hochul or you have to bring the National Guard in and restore some order there.
Yeah.
Here he is.
I am here today joining my colleagues and calling on President Shafiq to resign if she cannot immediately bring order to this chaos. Here today.
Was that cheers of happiness?
I'm here today joining my colleagues. And calling on President Shafiq to resign if she cannot immediately bring order to this chaos.
It's a mix. That's some booze and some cheers in there.
Really? Wow. The migrants that were flown to Martha's Vineyard, remember that? And they were quickly shown the door.
Two of them got lawn jobs.
Oh, that's right. Did they get the lawn jobs on Martha's Vineyard?
Yes.
Well.
There's the rich guy that walked out and he's like, I'll take two of you. Come on.
Well, I've got migrants down there at the clubhouse. I'll be right down. Let me get my golf cart. Well, the ones that a handful of them are now legally allowed to work in the United States because they're considered victims of a crime. They've been given, they've applied for and been given a special type of visa designated for illegals that are victims of crimes, known as a U visa, after they claim they were duped into boarding charter flights from San Antonio, Texas to Massachusetts. Well, that wasn't, well, and then three of the ones that were flown by DeSantis also got bona fide determinations for their U visas. Because they weren't duped into it.
No, they knew exactly what they were doing.
But because the media story was that they were, and this was somehow human trafficking or, it's inhumane. They trick these people because that was the story. Of course, this administration is going to grant them those visas.
I love the way they try to portray it as one that they're just poor, stupid migrants just looking for a better life. They have no idea they got tricked by the evil governor of Florida. But the moment they got tricked, they figured out, wow, that we now know U.S. law and how to get ourselves visas because they used a crime against us. Apparently, the couple months in that they were in the U.S., they all became just brilliant legalese there.
Yeah, I'm sure they got hooked up with a attorney, an immigration lawyer. The administration made sure they had someone out there to help them. I want to play a clip for you from MSNBC, believe it or not, and really indicating, you want your children to do better than you did, right?
Yes.
And your parents wanted you to do better than they meant by that to achieve the American dream and earn more and whatever. But, that's not happening anymore.
For the first time in our nation's history, a 30-year-old man or woman isn't doing as well as his or her parents were at 30. That is the social compact breaking down. People aged 30 to 34, 60% of them in 1990 had one child. Now it's 27%. People are opting out of America. They're not optimistic about it. They're not having kids.
I don't like that term, opting out of America. Does that mean they're opting out of America? I mean,
I just think that's like the opting out of the American dream type of thing.
Young people aren't having sex. They're not meeting. They're not mating. The pool of emotionally and economically viable men shrinks every day, which lessens household formation.
People aren't having sex. They're not doing it.
Pool of emotionally and economically viable men shrinks every day.
The pool of emotionally and economically viable men shrinks. Is he saying that generally that manliness and masculinity is shrinking?
Yes.
Which lessens household formation. So we have a real issue. Young people are enraged. So it turns every cut, every movement into an opportunistic infection because, quite frankly, they are just pissed off. They look up, they see wealth, exceptional wealth across my generation and people in certain industries. And they are really struggling. Their purchasing power is going down. And the incumbents create artificial scarcity on campus. We take pride in rejecting 90% of our applicants. So the incumbents who already have a degree see their degree go up in value. We get very concerned with housing and traffic once we own a housing. Housing permits are sequestered from young people. Housing prices have gone from 290 to 420 in the last 4 years. So a young person, a house, stocks that I don't own skyrocket in value. Let's have COVID relief and flush the markets and take assets way up, because if a million people dying would be bad, would be tragic if I got less wealthy. And we're doing it on their credit card. Young people have every reason to be enraged, and every issue they see, they look up, they get angry, and they see someone doing better than them. And then every day it is speedballed in their face that they are failing.
But they are failing. And they're blaming everybody else but themselves.
Right. I mean, he didn't even get to that part. Okay, that's the symptom of what of a everyone got a trophy era to academic malaise and focusing more on ideological stuff and you got a degree that's practically meaningless. Yeah, and you do see people that are doing better. Maybe you're seeing people working in trades. You might have gone to school that are your age that are doing better. You'll always look at when you're young out of college and, or in whatever that age he's talking about, you're going to see people that you're your parents' age that are successful. And yeah. Instead of being jealous and in rage, what happened to, work ethic and ambition?
That's because they're all being taught this equity and equality, and everybody's the same, and no matter that you all should have the same level playing field, and it's not there. Sometimes you have to work harder than somebody else. Sometimes, yeah, there is the kid that his parents are millionaires, and they gave him a loan, and guess what? He turned that loan into made himself a millionaire, and
right.
He didn't have to work hard at all. And then there's other people that you grew up with nothing, and they worked their ass off, and they
right.
got a good job, and they earned that stuff.
But I will say, if it's a generational thing, which this analyst seems to believe, then look around you at your peers. They're in the same mess you're in, and congratulations, you now have equity.
Yeah, but there's too many of them that don't. Instead of looking over there and going, you're struggling, Tom, though, man, he's doing great, and we can't figure out why.
Let's hate him.
So it must be something that he did against us. Not that we didn't do the right things. He got something good, or he got something we didn't get, or he did this. Not that maybe he just did things better than everybody else. It's always someone else's fault for their own failures.
Yes. Overall, you're right, and that's just not that the Gen Z is what he's talking about. I would guess, I would say that of the Gen Xers.
Yeah, but lucky enough, it does seem there's some glimmer of hope for the next one. What they call them, Gen Next or whatever the Gen after Gen Z.
They got a name for the new ones.
They do.
What? It's
a weird one they have for them.
Heather, find out what the next generation is called after Gen Z.
Okay.
It's got to have a name, right?
Alpha.
Yeah. Alpha. Generation Alpha. Okay.
But there seem to be a glimmer of some of them that are starting to already fight against this. Everybody's on the same level playing.
I'm a victim.
Yeah. I think that does. It's kind of cyclical. We do see after a while that the generations kind of flip back around. They go, and there's the work ethic comes back. And
were you at the point that you look at your peer and one of your peers, and they found some success and started a family and have a job or whatever? And then you start to pick apart the things that they had that must have advantaged them over you. That's when you know when it's really you,
yeah,
not them. President Milei in Argentina has reason to celebrate. This guy has been an absolute whirlwind, and he slashed spending. I mean, just killed an entire department. We don't need that anymore. And people thought it was crazy that there's no way the country could survive this madman. Well, he now is responsible for the country's first quarterly budget surplus in 16 years. And it's about $309 million. Not too bad.
Yeah, it's almost like the brilliance of not having a fat, bloated government is there.
Right. I mean, can you imagine? I mean, that's really only going the only way that America is ever going to climb its way out of, if we do, climb our way out of $34 trillion in debt, is if we just go and say, oh, Department of Education, don't need you anymore.
We don't need the Department of Native Studies. We don't need the Department of this and the Department of that. Just get rid of things that aren't needed. And that's what he did. And guess what? Argentina's thriving. It hasn't collapsed in on itself in anarchy. They're making money. They figured it out.
He said he agrees it's a feat of historic significance on a global scale. I agree. And he said it's very simple. If the state does not spend more than it collects and does not issue money, printing money like we do, there is no inflation. This is not magic. He calls himself an anarcho-capitalist. I like that. He instituted this austerity program. They've slashed subsidies for transportation, for fuel, for energy. The annual inflation was at 290% year on year, and poverty levels got up to 60%. Thousands of public servants lost their jobs. He said, don't expect a way out through spending. Universities there backed by unions and opposition parties called a march for Tuesday to protest financing cuts to higher education. They've declared budgetary emergency after the government approved a 2024 budget to be the same one as 2023, despite inflation getting up to 300% and a 500% increase in energy cost. I mean, that's just it. No one's willing to suffer. No one's willing to really make a sacrifice.
And sometimes it just has to be made for them.
I mean, imagine if something that's the main problem here is that there is no one with an eye toward cutting and making government smaller. to my knowledge, this is the first time I can remember a new leader with this attitude that has gone and done it.
Yeah, it's because of the fact that every time that we do consider it, you know, you come in there and say, DeSantis kind of was insinuating it that, oh, we're going to come in there and we're going to slash the Department of Education. We're going to do this. And of course, the people that are against it, the first thing they go is, but all those people are going to lose their jobs.
Yeah.
But then you go, okay, but these people are doing jobs that don't accomplish anything. They're right. There's no results from any of this.
They'll find a job in the private sector. You act as if the government's the only job they could possibly ever have. Most of our federal government is obsolete anyway.
Hey, there should be some performance things every once in a while. I mean, why do you have a Department of Education when we're having our worst test scores of all time? We have certain cities in the country that kids can't do math at a third grade level and they're in 12th grade.
We have, here's some departments, the Natural Resource Conservation Service, set up to help farmers minimize soil erosion in 1935. Over 5 years, it cost $3.5 billion.
Yeah, I think we probably can get rid of that. We figured out how not to erode the soil.
The Rural Electrification Administration, created in 35 as well, supposed to bring electricity to rural areas in 1949, then expanded to include telephone service. 5 years of that would save $1.8 billion. The USGS, the Geological Survey, to catalog geology and mineral resources of the United States. Mission is accomplished. Hello, it's been around since 1879. 5 years would save $3.4 billion. I mean, this goes list. You could find 15 or 20 of these and knock $100 billion off of our spending, but nobody's willing to cut anything.
What is the Office of Rural Electrification still doing right now? How many people are in that?
I bet they're being as quiet as they can.
Yeah.
I don't want to raise any attention to their office.
I mean, I feel like there's probably like four guys there, and they all like, shh, guys, don't tell anybody what's going on.
What do you guys do over in this office? Well, it's real complicated.
We're electrifying everything, mainly in rural areas.
Mainly electrification.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure everyone in America that wants electricity has it. And those that, like the Unabomber, he didn't have it. He didn't want it. Didn't care for it.
And we could figure out, I think there's enough people around that like, okay, if we don't need a whole entire office for this. We've got guys that can figure out how to electrify them if we need to.
The Rural Housing Development Service gave housing loans to rural residents during the Great Depression. Pretty sure that's over. $2 billion over 5 years. Public Health Service Commission was created in the 1800s to provide health care to merchant seamen. It would save $625 million over 5 years. I mean, you could find lists after lists. These are obvious. Big budget items is where you need to.
That's still billions of dollars that are opened up right there.
For absolutely obsolete programs the head of this, the Rural Electrification Board, submits a budget request, you know, for the coming year because he didn't want to get any less money. And what do they do? Take long drives in the country and try to find people without electricity and write their names down? You want some electricity out here, boy?
I was trying to find out who the head of that is, but that I think that's of the version for India.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's Abuluzi's Musa Yaravaduda.
You never know. It could be. When we return, our buddy John Jensen will join us. You may call him the voice of reason. Some call him the voice of treason. Both work. A big victory for the homeowners in the squatting thing in New York City, or New York, rather. And the whole thing that got the lawmakers to move was the optics of the owner of the home having handcuffs put on them and arrested inside their own home. I mean, come on. Let's not. We'll do it next. And our buddy John Jensen. Stick around. It's the Shannon Burke Show.
Wednesdays, we check in with our buddy John Jensen. You can find him where you get your social media. He's a great follow on X, at Fix the Nation. John, how are you, buddy?
Doing very, very well. Yourself?
Pretty good. The weather is gorgeous here. It's beautiful. And I'm almost off work. This mess in Colombia, the whole, and you know, now it's across the nation. These universities facing walkouts and protests and pro-Hamas. A lot of people, they just know they're poor Palestinians. But beyond that, we played some audio earlier. They weren't quite sure why they were protesting against Colombia, you know, to divest. They didn't know that part of it. We had another article where it's kind of an everythingism. All the things that are pissing off the left, they're all compiled into this one thing. What do you make of it? Do you think they're doing a good enough job controlling it? And should we bring in the National Guard?
Wow. National Guard, probably no. I always flash back to like Kent State. I just don't think that really helps anything when things are excitable as they are. I would dump it back on the quote-unquote leadership of Colombia. They made this crap by allowing all of this to play out. You now have an unsafe environment. Fix it. They make a boatload of money, hire private security. Let them bring in people to, quote-unquote, enforce the rules of the university. Now, quite frankly, they'd have to police their own because people protesting are more in alignment with the people in power than not. They're only doing this because now it's out of hand, and I'll call it the Jewish community and advocates have been beating the drum. By the way, on a side note, can I ask you a question? If they're going to be pro-Hamas/Palestinian, if they're going to go down that path, and Hamas is a terrorist organization, should these people be put on the terrorist watch list?
I would think so. The guys that are out there saying we're all Hamas, or it's not so bad to be, it's not a bad thing to be a Hamas fighter, or we support Hamas, or those, definitely that kind of chat needs to be, those people need to be watched.
I'll call it a step in radicalization has got to be through a path like this. You can radicalize people in a lot of different ways.
Right.
And I'm not saying that to be tongue in cheek. I'm not saying this to be funny or even from political context. If you believe that there's a path to radicalization that ends up in a very, very ugly thing in America, they need to police that in some way, shape, or form. And when people declare themselves, i.e. people who are protesting, to be pro a terrorist group, you know, you need to hear that from what they're saying. I'm going to say a different thing. This goes back to the clip that you probably listened to that they asked, you know, some students what they're protesting. They had no clue what they're protesting.
Yeah.
That's a recurring trend. Donald Trump's a racist. You ask the person who just made that comment, give me one example. They don't have one example to spout. You ask people, what are they protesting about Hamas? They don't. There's no there there. I had a person I talked to recently, and it was about Israel and how the conflict's going on. It was starting to escalate, that kind of stuff. And their comment was, well, Israel shouldn't behave like they do that. I'm like, so question, October 7th, you know, they were, you know, thousands of people were died and affected and taken hostage, and they were attacked by this terrorist organization. So before October 7th, what has Israel done wrong? There was nothing specific.
Right.
There's no there there behind the talking point they hear, and they just keep parroting and chirping along. Think for yourself, people. Do some due diligence. Get some facts behind you. If you say someone's a racist, have like two or three examples. If you think Israel's a bad nation, have two or three examples. If you think Hamas is right, have some talking points of what you think they do is right or Israel does is wrong.
Right.
Okay. And don't talk for Hamas. Talk for the Palestinians. Then you can make a case.
Right. Somehow part of me believes that that their pro-Palestinian protests weren't getting enough action or whatever or attention, and so they started to be, you know, to just agree and say, okay, we're all Hamas, we love Hamas, maybe just to pump up the anger against them, or they, I don't know. But I do want to know, who do you think is to blame for, I mean, there is, you have to agree that
there's a dangerous rise in anti-Semitism in this country right now. And the safety of Jewish people in New York City is a very big issue right now. Who's to blame?
Oh, I'm going to say, I think there's an organized twist bent to this. I think when there's uprisings, get people further up, go back to 2022. I'm pretty sure that's when Black Lives Matter played out. Is that right? Was it 2022 or 2020?
Yeah.
You know, and all that, you know, these different, you know, cities were being occupied, things were being burned and looted and all that kind of stuff. People, when they get unrest, they start to get up in arms. They start to get more impassioned about things. I think they're stirring the pot. They like to get people up in arms. It also gets people distracted. We're talking about Colombia, so we're not talking about the southern border. We talk about Colombia and Hamas, so we're not talking about the economy. It's a very big, sparkly object that they can just keep rallying on all the way through. And all these kids that are doing it, they are pawns and puppets. Okay, and if you look at these quote-unquote encampments springing up, it's amazing how the tents are matching.
What do you mean?
Oh, there are some places where, they're going to start having a sit-in, and all the tents are matching.
Right. Oh, yeah, I saw that.
This is just this is an organized event. Like, that's not grassroots. If it's grassroots, that has a different feel for me. You know, Tea Party kind of a thing.
So you think
if it comes from the people, it means more.
You believe it's funded somehow? I mean, I know that these people, once these pliable young minds that are already in a hopeless state of progressivism, they're easily manipulated to do this or do that. But who's behind what organization, what group, who would do that? Who would go out and buy 100 tents that all look the same?
We'll put it this way. I would always go back to Soros. I mean, you know, if there's endless money there. You know, if you want weak DAs and you're loose on crime and you want people to kind of be able to do what they want to do, there you go. I will also say this. These people all wear, for the most part, masks of some kind.
Right.
I am all for peaceful assembly. I do not think masks should be worn in peaceful assembly for non-health reasons. I think it's collective cowardice. Okay?
Okay,
if
I agree.
If you're going to speak out and protest, if you're going to use that right, which I completely celebrate, you should not wear a mask, because what you do is actually you limit your commitment to whatever you're talking about. If I'm going to stop out and talk about free speech, I'm going to talk about free speech with no mask on, okay, or abortion rights or gun control or whatever it is that, you know, that person is talking about, no matter what it is, okay? Put your face out there. Take the heat short term. You're better off for it. Commit to your cause. These people wear masks. They're just collective cowards.
I agree. And they're all that keffiyeh scarf that they make into a mask.
Correct. If you're that afraid of being identified, you have to ask yourself why.
Yeah. I mean, are you ashamed or are you not proud of your beliefs? That's a good question.
If you're doing what's right, why would there be pushback?
Hundreds of anti-Israel protesters gathered for a Seder in the streets in front of Schumer's house. Unlike the protests that occurred outside various Supreme Court justices, 209 of these were arrested.
Unquestioned.
Hmm.
This, you know what this reminds me of?
What?
Let's go back to Black Lives Matter moments where these mayors were talking about, you know, they have right to protest. They have right to protest. You know, defund the police. Defund the police. Right up until they got to the mayor's house, that particular block. Then the mayor turned on a dime and got the police there to defend the community. So right up until you threaten theirs, they're all big talk and rhetoric.
Right.
When a push comes to shove, they will show you every time how come their policies fail. Okay, and the sanctuary cities and states right now feeling duress and pressure from the southern border, you know, that's exactly an example of the failed policy. They will talk until they're blue in the face about what a great policy they have right up until they have to fund the bill. They have to take care of these people. But we can't do this. Yeah, no kidding.
The news out of Argentina is amazing. Milei's program there, you know, his austerity cuts have delivered the first Argentina's first budget surplus in 16 years there of $309 million. Pretty impressive stuff. I would call it a historic feat, a very significant accomplishment. Does it demonstrate that government can be wholesale hacked up?
I will not be packing my bags and moving to Argentina, but I do think it's interesting to think that Argentina is a more conservative, fiscally conservative country than America is right now. That's just amazing, given the fact of what they've done with their currency over the years. You know, but yes, it's a nice tenement. Do you remember the we're going to Paul Ryan days back in the day where they were talking about austerity measures,
right,
that kind of stuff, and people in Greece were like rioting and that kind of stuff. To me, is pushed through. Austerity is what we actually needed back then. We'd be in a much better place if we took that short-term hit. Nobody wants to give up theirs. I get that. But if you start to make cuts because cuts need to be made, at the end of the day, long-term, you're better off. Because what we're doing now in spending, deficit spending, $2 trillion a year and growing,
yeah,
and now spending another $100 billion overseas for three other borders and sovereignties and ignoring our own,
yeah,
this is just lunacy of printing money.
It's telling that no one is even willing to consider making cuts. Sorry, there's never been a Capitol Hill level discussion of cutting our government. Where can we cut our government? They don't even consider it as a possibility. Oh, we can't cut anything. That's not what we do. We don't cut. We just add more. With that attitude, yeah, you're right. A Malay austerity program is never going to happen here. Why is that?
Because we have a two-party system. One is spend a lot, and the other party is spend even more. Those are the two parties. The uniparty that people refer to is the upper crust of those two coalitions. We will not fix this nation. We will not fix our fiscal irresponsibility. We will not balance a budget until we get some people in Congress, the bulk of people, that are, I'm using a four-letter word, that are moderate, that are bipartisan, that are common sense, pragmatic individuals that are willing to see the bigger picture and not be part of this two-tribe fringe crap we have in this country right now. And I think, and I'll go back, this is the weirdest election year of my lifetime. I think from this year we spin off and get third, fourth, fifth real option parties, and a lot of that will come back to fiscal responsibility, a little bit of an American first vibe in there of we can't ignore us while we take care of the world. We're suffering here while they're benefiting. That's not how this country is built. We're compassionate, but we're not self-sacrificing to a fault where we will be homeless. We will be under threat of crime or, you know, national security because we're sending hundreds of billions overseas because our elite, you know, in D.C. are blind, whimsical, and protected from all those threats.
Let's change gears a bit. Perhaps the fourth time in a year, I've heard FBI Director Wray warn about possible terror attacks on U.S. soil. Worse, you know, the rising, you know, there's more elevated terror threats now than ever. I've never seen, he's talking about his career, so many threats on so many different fronts, and they've been so elevated at one time. And now, on ATL's NBC News, that he takes it a step further and offers up that we could see, quote, such an attack may not be that different from what you saw against the concert hall in Russia. That sounds real specific to me. What do you make of it?
It's tough to dissect that. If they're getting more specific, it becomes more real to me. I will say this. I think the military complex and the intel community both beat drums to create the illusion that their existence is more than necessary and should be bigger, better, stronger, faster. Think FISA. You know, they just had a battle and it was, oh my God, this country be at my, you know, so much risk. We didn't, you know, do this. They had no conversation about a middle ground of doing it with sensibilities, do it with accountability. And both parties signed off on this eventually. You know, so do I think it's more real? It's more credible the more specific you get. You know, but at the end of the day, when you have an open border and you have 2 million people crossing across there, and you cannot vet them in time. You have no idea who they actually are. You're putting us at risk just by default. Shame on you.
What are the odds? Oh, by the way, we did set a record. In the United States history, 1.7 and some change million came over in the first half of 2024. That beats
that's what I'm talking about. We're a winner.
We're back-to-back champs because we did the same thing in 2023. Except it was only 1.5 million illegal. So,
right. Do you remember the Jerry Lewis telethon?
Yeah.
You know, every year they had a goal, and every year they beat it by like $200. You know, every year it was bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
Come on, we can do more. Next 6 months, let's go. Let's break that title. Let's do two. Come on.
What do you believe, John Jensen, are the odds that Joe Biden will declare a climate state of emergency? A lot of talk about that.
Highly likely, 80%+.
Really?
It's just too easy. I will go back, by the way, when there was, I think it was Trump at the border, what one discussed a state of emergency or something like that. We just like in broad pouts about the border.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, don't do it. Don't do it, because we're going to use it for something that's, quote unquote, not real. You know, you can fix a different way, you know, through legislation. You open the door of Pandora's box for something like this. Well, then climate change. That's an emergency. It's not an emergency. It's something we can plan for and work toward a better outcome, you know. But I don't know how you can manage climate change, like death from climate change. No, death from something else that you are directing to some change in the weather or some up or down in temperature or someone who can't get food. Well, that's famine. That's not climate change, or lack of water. You know, that's drought. Well,
but
that's not climate change. That's just, it happens and people aren't in a developed nation.
The glaring issue with it is, as we're told, climate change is a global crisis, not just here in the United States. So it's quite meaningless. We're not even the biggest offenders. China and India are the biggest offenders. It's meaningless on any scope for us to take austere measures and severe, you know, restrict driving or how much gas you can buy, whatever they choose to do with these, you know, immense powers are useless in the global climate change fight.
I get a kick out of this. I go to Europe for the lunacy on where this debate is actually, like how they justify decisions. We're going to stop producing nuclear energy, which is very, very clean and efficient. And we're going to buy oil and gas from Russia. But that way they can meet their climate goals in Europe. Let me get this right. You're going to stop doing the actual clean energy. You're going to import it from a different country. Therefore, you're meeting your goals in your country because it's being produced elsewhere.
Right.
What an insanity.
I mean, this
of illogic is.
The thing, John,
this is how they keep spinning it, where, oh, hey, we're better off now. If we don't manufacture in the U.S., we can buy from China, bring it back here, we're better off. No, climate-wise. No, we're not. It's being produced elsewhere.
And it's being
burned coal over there for all things.
And it's being shipped here.
It's being shipped, and they burn coal big time, huge coal industry, okay, over in China. That's good for the environment, and China does not care. They could not care. They just build it cheaper, sell it lower, and beat us.
The reason I fear that he'll do this as an attempt to put in some measures of ballots or whatever come the election time is because it doesn't match the behavior of the last couple of years of this administration. He's approved more drilling in Alaska. He supported a liquefied natural gas export out of the Gulf, and he fast-tracked the Mountain Valley methane pipeline. If he's done all that, but now he's going to declare an emergency, that doesn't fit the narrative of what he's actually done, his administration has done. So, you know, what do you suspect the measures of this emergency would be?
Well, put it this way, there are two different things we're actually conflating here in the conversation. One is you need to back the climate change advocates, because that's where your base is, the environmentalists, the naturalists, et cetera, the leftists. That's where they are. Number two is you have to, in an election year especially, contain the price of oil and gas. You cannot have gas spike this year, goes to $5.50 a gallon. You would get slaughtered in November. And the SPR, by the way, is less than 40% of capacity. He has not refilled it. He has ignored it.
Yeah.
All right. And he has put a floor in the barrel price of oil. He says, we're going to buy it back at $65 to $72 a barrel, which means it won't go below that price. Even if we had a recession right now, oil would still stay up there because he's going to buy it when it hits that level.
Right.
What an insanity that is.
Yeah.
And I keep using the word insanity. I apologize to those who are actually saying this is something we can control. This is just bad governance.
Do you think it would survive?
Do you think
obviously it would be challenged? Do you think it would survive a Supreme Court challenge? Because in its history, the Supreme Court has never overturned a presidential emergency declaration on challenge.
I'm not even sure if that's important anymore, because they said that his decision about, you know, giving up debt for student loans was unconstitutional. He's been doing that anyway.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure if he'd even care. And by the way, he wouldn't do it for that reason. He'd do it because he needs to do it. He's going to put it on the books, damn torpedoes kind of mentality. I will say this. As long as he feeds his left base and he feeds the people who are just, you know, oh my God, we're going to be, you know, frying in 2 years. You know, let's put dust in the ozone layer to block the sun rays. You know, these are some crazy people with just really far out there ideas. Can you imagine putting something up there to block sunlight and they overdid it and we get cold?
Well,
how do you undo that?
What about the other aspects
of the
crazy Green New Deal that could be rammed down everybody's throat under these emergency orders? I mean, he's going to have warlike powers if he's granted this.
Yeah. So we will see what actually happens.
Yeah.
But, you know, when it comes to climate change, they serve that master willingly and fervently.
Amen. John Jensen, thank you, brother. Good to talk to you. Follow John where you get your social media at Fix the Nation. A great follow on X. Good to talk to you, man.
Thanks, Shannon.
See you, buddy. All right. George Santos has ended his comeback. I guess maybe he didn't foresee this, but after his entire disgraceful life was exposed, he's having trouble raising money.
Yeah, it's almost like a guy that was conning people out of money is going to have a hard time raising money.
Megan Thee Stallion, an ex-employee suing her, claiming she had sex with a woman in front of him and then threatened him not to tell anyone. What? I mean, where is the violation? Because she forced him to watch?
Yeah, he was riding in a big SUV with her, and
yeah,
he had to sit there while she had sex with a woman, and he had to watch.
Did he have to watch?
I mean, it's very difficult to look away. It's like a, you know, car crash going on there.
Yeah, if Megan Thee Stallion, she's rather robust in the behind area, and having sex with a woman. The guy's name is Emilio Garcia. He worked for Roc Nation and Megan Thee Stallion Entertainment as her personal cameraman. Was he gay and just like grossed out by
I mean, not any straight dude
would be watching. I don't care if it's Megan Thee Stallion. You know, it wouldn't be that traumatizing. I mean,
I don't know how weird it got in there.
That's true. Could they scissor in an SUV, or is that Megan Thee Stallion's awfully big?
I mean, if they, it's a big SUV. Oh,
all right.
Get some gymnastics going on.
So he wants her to pay him because he was actually forced to watch this.
Yeah, he feels he was sexually harassed.
All right. He may have a point there. Not in 1870.
No.
Hell no. That's a frivolous case right there, my friend. We'll get to that and your remarks next. It's the Shannon Burke Show.
Yes, this Friday on Main Street, you'll find us in front of the Blue Island Sportswear. I knew that. We'll be out there 2 to 6 doing the show, and Lummy will be out there later. He's going to be doing stage announcements. Low Cash is playing Friday. Saturday, Sugar Ray and Frankie Ballard on Sunday. It's a good time at Leesburg Bike Fest. Our buddy Michael Breen will be out there from 911 Biker Law. Come on out and hang out. They found George Washington's cherries.
Did he lose them?
I don't know. They found these old bottles. They're doing some excavations, part of a major revitalization of of Mount Vernon. And they found the bottles appearing to date from the 1740s or 1750s were unearthed beneath a brick floor. What, are you hiding them under the brick floor?
Maybe they were special cherries.
They've been there, laid there, the floor had been laid in the 1770s. They're more concerned about the glass bottles. So in order to preserve them, they transferred the contents, cherries, pits, stems, and a, quote, gooey residue into smaller vessels for future analysis. They said, not only do we recover intact sealed bottles, but they contain organic material that could provide us with valuable insight into the perspective into the 18th century lives at Mount Vernon. The bottles have the potential to enrich the historic narrative. We're excited to have the contents analyzed. We can share the discovery with fellow researchers and the visiting public. What do you think those cherries taste like?
Oh, you know one of them had to try it. There is a whole excavation group. They all went, dude, eat one of Washington's cherries.
I'm dipping my finger in that gooey substance. I'm giving it a taste.
Yeah, I'm going to go for it.
I mean, George Washington's hands may have touched it, no matter what it tastes like. And what they ought to do is use those cherries to add other cherries and make some very special George Washington cherry jam or something.
Let Meghan Markle sell it on her website.
I like stuff like that.
It's fascinating that they're still finding pieces. I mean, that has been a historical site for 200 years, and they're still finding pieces to it.
Discovering bits of it they didn't know. You dug up a brick floor. Who knew you'd find cherries?
It's a good thing they found cherries, because would you think they'd have told everybody if they found some of Washington's old nudie pictures underneath there? old George's etchings that he had?
Maybe like a wooden carved dildo or something like that. Why would Zelensky need the list of the members of Congress who voted to give him $61 billion?
Sir, Bill Keating from Massachusetts. Good to see you. And I have something that you're really going to like.
Yeah.
This is the official tally of the vote.
Yes, I see.
For the supplemental aid.
Yes.
And look at that vote. 73%.
Yes. Thank you so much. 73.
So he's got the list of all the people he needs to write cut checks to. That's basically what it is. Here's the payroll for this month.
I see. This doesn't look like American money. You're supposed to be bringing me American money.
Yeah, what is the money? This I don't see. What is this?
Why is Bill Keating, a congressman, need to fly to what's considered an active war zone so he can hand another leader a list of people that voted for that?
A list of people that made it possible for him to receive $61.1 billion. I don't know. How about an email?
Can we not just
a phone
send
call?
That?
Really? I don't get it. Even for show value, it makes no sense.
No.
Because the first thing everyone says is, what? What? Don't you guys have phones there? And I'm sure Zelensky watched that vote like it was the last couple of minutes at a tied soccer game.
I mean, why other reason do you need to go out there other than to get whatever money or whatever stuff that you're getting? There's no reason for Bill Keating, of all people, to travel to Ukraine for anything.
I do understand, and I hear that. If you are dealing with numbered accounts in overseas accounts, they have no name, no nothing. This is just a number. And if you have the number, you have access to that account, no matter who you are.
I think that's way worse. But the only way people that have them ever share the information is in person by hand.
Yeah.
You don't ever send it in an email, call them on the phone. So they're probably swapping accounts. Here's where the money goes. Every guy on this list got an account. There's a number right next to their name. Then you know what to do.
I mean, there's just no fathomable reason for that man to go there. It's all some sort of dog and pony show that I just don't get. I don't know what's going on, why this is. You would think it's just money, but there seems to be something more to it. I mean, really, why do we have him going out there? Why do we have the other congressman who's calling Ukrainian soldiers on the front line to tell them that they voted for them to get more money? Yeah. You're like, why does a congressman have an open line to a soldier on the Ukrainian front line?
During an active war, you call him and give him good news. You're right. That is all a show.
Why was Bill Keating the one that was chosen this time?
He hadn't gone yet. It was his turn. He spun the wheel.
Yeah, you would think of all people, it would be Speaker Johnson would be the one that would, of all people. There's no reason that Bill Keating
from Massachusetts
needs to go there.
Here's the list. I mean, and the first thing anybody thinks, anybody, I don't care who you are, is the, I mean, he's handing him a large, it looks like a legal size, legal pad, like folder. And the first thing everybody thinks is that's the list of people that you need to start cutting checks to. You owe these people.
Is that an authentic AOC signature?
His voice is weird.
Yeah, it's
like
not
frog voice. Let's get to these remarks. From the Florida Man radio app, powered by Morris Family Farms and Morganic Meats. A favorite of yesterday's show guy, archives galore of this program, and Don Miller. So you can call the show, text the show from the app. Also, hit the little microphone button and leave us a brief message. Here we go.
Hey, Shannon. I hold no judgment against Pee Wee Herman. I mean, I don't blame the guy. I mean, everything in his house had eyes. And his neighbors just constantly kept coming up to his window. He had no privacy. I don't blame him.
I was always amazed that he got busted for masturbating in a porn theater. I'm like, why else would you go?
Yeah, it's
weird.
A few days behind here, but you guys are talking about American cheese and how much of a pain it is on a wrap, and I totally agree with you 100%. I like to get the white American cheese from Publix, the Boar's Head stuff. That stuff's amazing.
Yes.
It melts nice. It's great on smash burgers. If you get a good deli person, they'll stack it right when they slice it so it doesn't stick to each other and become like one solid block. And it makes great queso, too. So heads up on that one.
Yeah, that's what I use for my Blackstone Philly cheesesteaks. Probably an affront to the Philly cheesesteak people. But
the guy has one boys' night out, and he gets laid. I got to start hanging around with those guys.
Watching these protests all around the country, I think these kids are absolutely right. I think these schools should divest from anything to do with Israel. In fact, anything to do with anybody who's Jewish, including the endowments from those benefactors that, in fact, were Jewish. In fact, I think there should be reparations. I think all the schools should give back all the Jewish money that they've ever taken. See how that works out for them.
I don't think it's going to work out very well.
Wama Hangalo challenge liberal Larry in a duel. Weapon of choice, Bubba Love Sponge penis pump. Winner is the person that has less penis pump suck marks. Okay, good duel. We try that tomorrow. Beedle.
Hey, fellas, this is Pap here from Floral, Alabama. When y'all went on y'all's talk about the dueling up at the legislation offices, y'all missed a good opportunity to talk about the sledgehammer duel that happened in Louisiana in 1817 between two Louisiana lawmakers. It's hilarious. Y'all take care of yourselves, and I'll talk to y'all guys later. Be-doo, be-doo. Oh, be-doo, be-doo, be-doo.
I never heard of the Sledgehammer Duel.
You have to look that one up.
Sounds painful.
That is so laughable. People are not having sex? Come on. Look at all the people having sex on Pornhub. What gives?
Shannon, Easy, Heather, KP again in the panhandle. I think Don Miller addressed that pretty good this morning about the lack of people in the workforce in general. They had a guy call in from Alabama who couldn't get linemen. They're paying $60 an hour, and they can't get linemen. And a lot of these younger people today, they don't want to work. They don't want to get the responsibility of life, family, and homes. There's a lot to be said for the dynamics and the parameters of all of this. Be-doo-be-doo.
A gig as a lineman, that's, those guys make bank.
Yeah, but you got to work.
Oh, yeah, it's real work.
Well, I'm 30 years old, and I work my ass off every day. I own my own home, tried to have a baby. Unfortunately, she waited 10 months, and that was, she passed on. And, I don't know if I'll try to have another one or not, but I don't know. These people just need to quit being all whiny and just get to work and be grateful for what they got.
Amen. Hardworking man right there.
Hi, Shannon. It's beyond the everybody wins a trophy generation. These people like Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, all they talk about is taxes, tax the rich and pay their fair share of the wealthy. Did Elon Musk get gifted whatever he has? Guy's smart. He worked and he did it and he does pay taxes. These people think that you just won a lottery if you have a little bit in life. I can't stand any of them. They're all useless. Beedoo, beedoo.
Right. And people assume that anybody that's really, really rich and successful had to have their daddy give them a lot of money.
Yeah.
Which is not true. In some cases it is, but not in all
cases. It happens.
Yeah.
Man, how perfect example was that at Columbia when Johnson mentioned her resigning? And there was like a mixture, like some people cheering, some people booing. They're all like looking around like, wait, are we for that or against that? What are we doing? And then, yeah, as for the kids, man, I think it's all about that this victim mentality, and they've been taught to look for reasons why they can't do something and talk about that, as opposed to just getting it done and overcoming and like being that the reward and what's celebrated.
Hmm.
Yeah, Shannon. Hopefully that Generation Alpha will turn things around, but I don't have much faith because the generation after that is supposed to be Gen Itals.
I apologize, I'm over the limit, but a quickie. My buddy worked for the New York City Transit Authority fixing buses in the 1980s, and he told me that once a year they would throw away brand new parts because it would affect their budget for the following year. And none of it made any sense, even back then as a kid. But you're talking about 40-plus years ago, and this was going on. It's only worse now. Terrible. Wow. It really is. It's so wasteful. Beautiful.
I mean, look at all those. Look into those places. A lot of places, they'll buy a foosball table for their office because they need to spend what's left of their,
right,
of their budget to make sure they have the same budget next year.
Hey, guys. Great show. Those protests in Columbia University, there's pretty much one way to get rid of them. The good old water cannon. I don't mean water cannon to spray them off their shoes. I mean, like, make it rain for 3-4 hours, and when they get soaked, a wet protester will go home. Be-doo, be-doo.
A wet protester will go home.
Yeah, because you know those idiots didn't actually weatherproof their tents like they're supposed to,
right,
so they'll leak real easily.
I don't know why we don't use the water cannons like so many European countries do.
The visual.
That's the fun. That's the best part about it. Or maybe we could employ some robot flamethrower dogs.
Yeah, I'm all for that.
Hey, these so-called peaceful protesters, who's paying for all their signs and the food and the tents? And where do they go take a crap? I mean, who's paying for them to sit out there, feed them, support them? Somebody's got to be behind this with a bunch of money. And the next thing is, the first people that should be punished are the parents for letting their punk-assed kids do this crap.
Do you suppose that their parents are with them in spirit? They would never, because you know, they're adults and they have very successful careers in order to put their kids through, you know, $450,000 education. But they're proud, or they believe the same way, or they think their kids are idiots.
It's probably a good mix. There's a bunch of them that, you know, they graduated from Columbia. They're also hippie, dippy, think that. And then there's also some of them that are like, anybody checked on what Buffy's doing lately?
I think I saw her on CNN eating a $12 croissant. Oh, wait, I missed this one.
Hey, guys, and Heather, Kevin, and Navarre. Hey, D'Amico on Don Miller's show this morning was talking about there are colleges where you can take classes to learn how to protest. And then once you get out of there, there are companies like, I think she said, People for Protest in Los Angeles, where they will hire you to go to these quick, blown-up protests. This is all just follow the money, guys. Love your show.
How much
Much
dough could you make being a professional protester?
Probably, if you're good. I know that we saw the one
six figures a year
during the whole Hollywood one. They were looking for tall people, and they were offering them like $100 an hour to come out and protest if they
the
were
taller. The more money you make, because you can hold the sign higher,
and just more intimidating.
Oh, okay.
Just a PSA to any DOD workers out there: do not on your government computer. Go to morganicmeats.com.
What happened?
I don't know. That's a
what's going on here?
Yeah, I think what's going on with the FBI is they're freaking out at the fact that they're picking up chatter on stuff that's happening, and it's not them the one that's creating it for the first time. You know, like, wait, we don't have seven agents plotted. Who's planning this one? Johnson's at you? You know what I mean? Like, I think that's what's going on, is they're freaking out.
Ooh.
Well, I want to know about this SUV. Was it kind of a limo SUV, or was it like a three-row SUV? So Megan Thee Stallion was in the second row with their girl, and this dude was in the back seat. Was he in the front seat? I need some logistical information about this.
I didn't read it, but I would bet.
It sounds crazy as hell.
I bet it's very well documented in the lawsuit.
Yes.
Megan whipped out some lube.
I wonder what kind of SUV that Megan Thee Stallion was having sex with a woman in with a photographer guy is mad and suing. Maybe he's bummed out because he wasn't invited. He's jealous. But it seems like it would have to be a very tall SUV. You know, you gotta get in the right position.
That photographer that saw the stallion having sex with another woman, he is definitely a fruit. He's on fire. You need to shake his hand with an oven mitt, because if seeing her like that doesn't do nothing for you, you're done.
Who knows? He probably got who knows? He may have even enjoyed it, but it's a bona fide sexual assault suit.
Yeah, and she also called him a fat ass too all the time. Told me he needs to start dieting. That's
she's
probably
not exactly why. You know, Jane Fonda herself. I mean,
not tall, but wide enough to whatever.
Kick it out wide.
What is sex anyway between two women? I mean, you're either, what did they used to call it, 69, right, or the other thing that you wear. It has to be wide.
She's talking about pegging.
Okay.
She missed scissoring altogether. Yeah. I didn't even come into the conversation.
All right, Shannon, you know you got to do this. Freaking cherries, mason jar, Jamerson. Set it in your fridge for about a year. Let it just mellow and sit. Yeah, put it in the back of the fridge where you're not. Put it in that white fridge out in the carport. Just leave it there. And then, you know, next thing you know, man, you've got the best cherries you've ever tasted in your life. Anyways, be-do, be-do.
What kind of cherries are we talking? Uh-huh. Fresh cherries? you know, I know he's not talking about maraschinos.
Also, he thinks that you're going to just forget about Jameson in your fridge for an entire year.
Oh, no. I've got an emergency, the hip flask size bottle in the garage, and two dozen airplane bottles stashed in various places in case of emergencies.
Hey, dude, it's Matt again. What I'm loving right now is what I'm seeing at University of Texas. Greg Abbott is going in there with the state police and basically clearing those fools out and arresting them. He is not taking any crap, and obviously, I love it. Hook 'em horns.
Zelensky's voice is weird because all them D's he asked.
Wait, now we have yesterday's yesterday, day before yesterday show, guy.
Shendo, you know what was in them bottles in the Washington thing? It was moonshine. He was making moonshine. That's what the cherries were for.
I bet it was. He was known to distill, right?
Yeah, a little presidential moonshine.
Shannon, Pee-wee should have been enjoying that glorious film up on the screen. A masterpiece of art showing the body form in all of its glory. All right. Breasts.
Okay, I'm trying to get through this.
Hey, man, this is Clovis. Hey, man, I've got a really healthy prostate, man. I just want to thank Kate and her showers in the afternoon. Man, I'm a healthy as a son.
All right, I'll cut these short.
Hey, Shannon, Liberal Larry here. You know, way to get your conspiracy theory right-wing conservative base all riled up, saying that Zelensky wants to pay off the people that voted for him. Yeah, right. You know, in reality, really all he wants is to send him a nice thank you card, maybe a little fruit basket or something. Jeez, you know, just like you to get everybody all up in arms about everything.
Yeah. Damn it, if that's not an excellent Liberal Larry. Wow.
The voice of treason said, shame on you to the politicians. Man, those people eat small children. They have no shame.
Hey, man, I worked for 20 years playing music at night and a day gig in the daytime. And all I've got to show for it is my happy ass sitting at home. I'm late.
Okay. I want to go.
Hey, Clavin here. Today's my first day really listening to the show this week. I don't know if you guys have gone over this, but this bird flu is real. I went to Shannon's favorite other little island, Tuckernuck, this week, and I've never seen so many dead birds in my life. Dead ducks everywhere. It's really sad.
Wow.
I openly disagree with that guy that said punish the parents for those protesting kids. Heck no. Hold them little snot rags accountable for their own actions.
Amen. Sorry, I just want to blow.
Hey, boys. Hey, so I just had me a thought. Black people want reparations. Yeah. We need a water cannon on these protesters. Let the black people man the cannon.
Oh, God.
Shannon, you just asked about the parents with and their thoughts about children or their children protesting and whatnot. And, really you know, I think it's a rite of passage, like it or not. And that's not to say that indoctrination has been happening, and it certainly has been. But, you know, college and that arena, it really is a stupid time, and you do really stupid things.
That's all the time we have, although we have a few left. I'm sorry we didn't get to them sooner. Powered by Morris Family Farms and Organic Meats, the remarks are from the Florida Man Radio app. Our last break, we'll come back to wrap it up for you. It's the Shannon Burke Show. In Uttar Pradesh, India, there is a mobile app of a tenant verification where, you know, you want to go live somewhere. You plug in your information and they can approve you. In the occupation dropdown, which they say is based on master data populated by the NCRB, whatever that is for the country, National Crime Records Bureau. The options include smuggler, hired killer, and gambler as professions for tenant verification. They're using data. They say that it's based on the master data populated by the National Crime Records Board. So that states have flagged the issue with concerned agencies. They're taking it up with them to rectify it.
I like how they say it's a mistake, but I think these cops just are thinking that people are stupid and they're going to put like, my job is a drug dealer.
I'm a smuggler. Yes, I'm doing lying. I'm a hired killer too. Part of time.
That's it for us today. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you, EZ.
Thank you.
And thank you, Heather.
Thank you.
We're back tomorrow at 2 Eastern, 1 Central. We follow the Don Miller Show. Hysterically funny, man. And he follows Bubba the Love Sponge. My dear buddy, I forgot to wish him happy birthday yesterday. He was pilled up early about 6 o'clock. We'll see you tomorrow on the Florida Man Radio Network. Good night.